Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red lights to the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. Red lights to the round table. Our shows are more. We're able. So many times we give and rhyme to our quiet dancing label. We're off to mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire of Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how do you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet!
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet! I order you to be quiet!
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
He, he, he seizes the turtle. All rise for King Seizes the Turtle and the Knights of the Round Table.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, watch that sound. Everybody look what's going down. saying wrong. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street, singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey.
everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com and over at TCT Radio. If you want to jump in over there, go to the superchat.html at shazizradio.com and you get access to not one but three chat rooms. Pretty cool. I've been joined by Honorable Knight Barbara Three Crow. Hi, lady. How's it going?
Well, I'm very honored. I've just been knighted.
Yeah, see how easy that was?
Very easy.
Now, the job might be a little tough because kind of what we're talking about today here is something I hope never occurs. But, you know, there's a little bit of saber rattling going on around the world, like with North Korea. North Korea did a few missile tests and shot some missiles out there in the water next to Japan and got them a little nervous and been talking about, you know, doing some attacking if we do certain deals. You know, North Korea yells a lot. They've been doing it for years, and usually they give them something to make them happy, and then we leave them alone. They leave us alone for a while. But either way, if you listen to a lot of people out there in the alternative media, I mean, there's a lot of hyping of a potential World War III, and I've got a lot of reasons why that probably shouldn't be a good idea. And I don't know what kind of crazy madmen we got running the planet out here, but I got a suspicion that they're not as brilliant as people like to give them credit for. Because, number one, I don't think Russia wants war with anybody, and don't think China really necessarily wants war with anybody. And I know for a fact that the average Joe doesn't want war with everybody. See, right now we got a couple little we got a couple man-made disasters going on out there that's been ongoing for quite some time. There's the Fukushima incident, and there's the BP oil spill, and those things still haven't been completely resolved. And those are bad enough, let alone compounding the potential of a World War III episode playing out. You understand what I'm saying? It could get bad. And it wouldn't be nice at all. I mean, if folks really contemplated on the implications of what would actually occur during a World War III scenario, you know, even if it stayed conventional or just normal bombs and never went thermal nuclear or anything like that, there's a lot of nuclear power plants out here. There's a lot of infrastructure that's required for daily living and going doing, you know, business and all that kind of stuff, to and fro work. And when that stuff starts getting tore up in every nation, you know, it's going to be a really serious problem starting to occur. And it's not just going to be the fact that, you know, you can't now go to the grocery store and get the food that you need, or go to the hospital and get the medications or whatever treatments that you need, because these infrastructures will be the first ones attacked. They'll attack the nuclear power plants, because the idea of war is to do as much destruction to make your enemy submit. And so the obvious first choice would be any potential missile silo, any potential power plant, any potential infrastructure, bridges, and all that kind of stuff. And so my hopes and the reason for this particular topic starting off today's shows is to just put that out there on the table for people to get some sort of general idea, to step back and weigh out all the possibilities of such an act. Now, in the conspiracy world, which nowadays the conspiracy world ain't so conspiratorial, like I said, it ceases to be a conspiracy theory when birds start dropping from the sky and fish start going belly up in the ocean and such. And so we got to think about all those things amplified at a magnitude unlike anything in the history of time, potentially. There's also a conspiracy that there were other super advanced societies before us that got to the point where they pretty much hit their equivalents of their World War III and basically wiped themselves off the map, and now here we are today. See, I don't know. I wasn't alive back then, so I couldn't tell you whether or not. But there are some interesting statues popped up over here, and some pyramids over there, and some nifty structures, and a lot of questions on how they got there and that kind of stuff. But nonetheless, we're in the here and now, so we'll talk about the here and now. Right here and now, if a nuclear bomb drops in the middle of a major city right next to me, there's going to be a whole lot of people not there anymore. And I got a lot of family that live down there. And so that wouldn't be very nice, you know. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that live near big cities or even in cities that have family on both sides of the fence out in the country and even in the city. And when you think about how when the infrastructure actually comes unglued and you have to contend with what's left over, it's not going to be a pretty sight if it ever occurs. And so I think about right about now would be the time, the best time to stop World War III is before it ever even starts. You know, from a grassroots level, start raising your voice up and telling all the politicians, you know, up the chain of command, you know, y'all need to back off. Because we don't want our planet destroyed. We got people on radio shows like TCT Radio, and you do a radio show too, right, Barbara?
Yeah, I do. Hi, Shaziz. Yeah, I do on Haggy Shack Radio. I do Beyond Reality, and then I'm on Turtle Talk with Patty Walkin' Turtle, and I'm on, well, I think today is Gerald Whitehorse Standing, I Have Something to Say, and I also have a new show on Wednesdays on TCT, These Changing Times, which is Unraveling the Mystery. And now I'm here with you, happy to do that.
Well, I think the one thing that both of our shows or all of our shows have in common is we're trying to figure out ways to sort through and find the truth and make the world a better place. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, you're right on that. And we've been doing this for how many years, you know. It's interesting because I don't know how long you've been on radio doing your thing, but I kind of have an idea. Patty, for instance, has been on a long time, and then I was pulled in through Gerald Whitehorse Standing, probably about 4 years now, maybe almost five. And, you know, we've been talking pretty much about the situations and circumstances and the issues that are obvious to us and that perhaps they're not so obvious to others. We see people getting, you know, misdirected. And that's an agenda. You know, I'm all for talking about this agenda thing because people don't really realize how they're being manipulated. And but within these past, just these past 5 years, there has been such an extraordinary, amazing shift into events that are mind-blowing, right? Pretty stunning. And not just, you know, governments, what they're doing, but of course we have our recent election, but what's going on with the earth, the changes, various circumstances like that, dead fish, I guess they say we're in the sixth extinction, Shaziz, and you know, people say, oh, there's no global warming, that's a hoax, it's just all about money and carbon tax and all that stuff, but you know, you have to be realistic here and look clearly at what is happening on this earth through the die-offs, the diseases, the sicknesses that are spiking. And I say, doesn't matter what you call this, you got to know something is going on. It just makes common sense. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to see there are huge changes going on, and they are pretty disturbing, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it just like every time I see one of those, there's tons of videos. If you go out there and look, there's tons of videos where there's just the whole entire lake or stream is just like covered with dead fish. And I'm thinking, my God, what's going on in this area? Because, you know, if those big fish are floating on the top, it's hard to tell what's laying on the bottom down there. And there has to be some sort of reason why all this. Most generally, they come out and they'll say, well, you know, they overpopulated and suffocated themselves and they didn't got enough oxygen and stuff like that. I don't buy that in the least. I know we got some serious issues that between chemicals that different companies like to dump down the drain and even the average Joe making a mistake and dumping stuff down that they shouldn't be. You know, there's certain places that you need, or certain chemicals that need to be diluted before they ever go back into the environment, because it's obvious that, you know, it's not going to be helpful to any living organism. And there's a lot of stuff that we spray around our houses to get rid of insects or stuff like that. Well, those cans, they end up in the dump, and they get, eventually rotted, and then that chemical will leak out and go down into the water table. And, you know, so I think what we could be seeing on a partial scale, not on the overall scale, but on a partial scale, is some of these events where streams are getting really polluted and basically wiping out the ecology or the wildlife inside there. And the deal with BP oil spill, I was shouting it back then, don't dump that stuff in the water, man. If it's supposed to be dispersing oil to break it up so that microbes can eat it, what's that doing to the fish? Because we know that fish have oil in it. People have oil in them, you know? And the fish, remember that saying, you are what you eat?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, imagine I'm eating a fish that's got that stuff in there and I suddenly don't start to feel so well. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Or even, you know, if particles from the reactor from Fukushima are actually getting it into the food stream and you're eating radioactive tuna or whatever, you know, that's not a good thing. And so what we're trying to put down here is not a layer of fear, because there's enough of that going around to, you, if you want to be afraid, go out there and go down the rabbit hole like we have several times, and you'll find things that'll make you fearful. What we're trying to talk about is before it actually gets, Barney Fife said it best, we got to nip it in the bud. Before it ever even gets started, before World War III ever unlocks, when they start talking this war, we the people got to rise up and raise our voices as loud as physically possible to ensure that they know that we're not on board with World War III. You know, it's been bad enough with some of the little conflicts that's going on here. When I say little, I mean it's not global, but it's still, there's the ramifications of, just take what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, for example. You know, okay, they were shooting depleted uranium out all over the place up there. Alright, what's the long-term effects of that? Because that stuff ain't completely, safe yet. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I think that we have a lot of hidden things that are affecting us. Some we know. It's an enormous amount of stuff that's affecting the environment and the water, certainly, and the environment, the air quality, the food. You have a whole list of stuff, but I think I just want to point out how people need to get their focus. They need to get a focus on the real issues here, and I think World War III is a big issue to focus on. And not the other stuff that people are being led to focus on and be irate and react about. Like, for instance, Trump's not my president. Trump is the president. You know, I'm not happy with it, but Trump is the president. But what are the real issues and what are the distractions? Everything that we're talking about here, like what's happening to the oceans, the water, the food sources, and the World War III, you know, verging into this territory of, you know, I call it the roosters, or the roosters in the hen house. Always they're jockeying for position, you know. A bunch of roosters with cock-a-doodle-dooing around, you know, at the border. Well, you know, my weapons are bigger than your weapons, you know, and don't you step over that line because I will just, you know, throw a bomb on you and all this stuff, you know. These are the things we really have to pay attention to, not, Trump is not my president. I'm just picking out that one because people are really being distracted from the real issues. They're whole hog into this crazy screaming event or reactionary. That's an agenda to keep the people unfocused from what we're talking about, what we're really saying here. If there is this World War III event, forget, it doesn't matter who your president is. Forget that. It just does not matter. you know. But now they have smart nuclear bombs, you know. So they have they're just like a focused nuclear bomb, sort of like on a smaller scale, not like the Hiroshima or Nagasaki bomb, you know. So now they have these smart nuclear bombs which can do a certain type of damage, or focused damage, or more controlled damage. And this was came out, I think, about a year ago. And, of course, all of these governments were lining up in, you know, let me get there first. I got my ticket. I'm going to be first to get this. And to me, this is a nightmare, that whole thing about a possible war. World War III is not going to be your typical tanks and army rifles. It's not. We're headed in a different direction. The technology is, you know, beyond our imagining, really. And I don't want to go there. You don't want to go there. I mean, what's going to be left, you know, if that happens? But it seems that there are some who are hell-bent to have this happen. And you just got to say, why? You know, what is it with these people, you know, these warmongers? Now, I do know that war, of course, is builds the economy. You know, I mean, I think we know that, you know, when you have war, you know, everybody's at work. The economy goes up high. Everybody has a job, whatever you want to call it. But there's lives lost, people. Innocent lives are lost. And we're being led by a cabal that wants to have war, wants to have new world order, and the only way they're going to get that is to take out those who are not going to play the game, those who are not playing the game, you know. Yeah. And the Middle East, you know, like it, in Iran and Iraq and Afghanistan is still going on. It's not, remember when, it is presently still war there. We've been in war for how long? I don't know.
Too long. So,
right? I don't think we've ever been not in war in these past 30, 40, 50 years. But people don't call it a war. I don't know what they call it. And we just say, oh, yeah, now they're just sending all these troops, more troops to what border is it? I don't know. It doesn't matter. They're just escalated troops out there. Is it, you know, do you know? I mean, I know there's just been an escalation. Is it on that border? Is it South Korea? Maybe it is. That's what it is.
I know they said they got North Korea surrounded right now. And
well, you know, they're dealing with a maniac, but all these people are maniacs. The ones who are leading us there, they're all crazy. And the guy over there, Kim Jong-un, whatever his name is, that man is a little crazy, you know? I mean, if you fall asleep in one of his, while he's talking or something, if
sure,
you fall
that
asleep,
haircut? Oh, my God.
But he'll have you assassinated. He's had his people, own people, assassinated because they look like they were sleeping while he was talking. And he went to this fishery where they were, creating, you know, some kind of fish or lobsters or building that whole business or whatever. And he wasn't happy with the lobsters, so he had the guy, the fishery owner, assassinated.
Man.
Yeah, how'd you like to live in that territory?
Oh, I wouldn't, especially, I think you said that haircut that he had was mandatory for everybody to have. And
no. That too, right? I mean, well, you know, in this country, we're not on that level yet, but it's...
Yeah, I got it. But I want to remind people of a terminology that was adopted quite some time back when atomic weapons actually came into the picture. There was a term that they called MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction.
Mm.
Let that absorb in for a second, and the actual meaning of Mutual Assured Destruction. Essentially what it was the superpowers had decided, well, you know, hey, we will literally blow it all up so that you don't get it. There ain't gonna be no winner. And that's pretty much what they decided. That if they launched theirs, that we were going to launch ours, and it was going to be an all-out, it's, you know, whatever's left over, you know, whoever's alive, I guess they're the king of the world. But, you know, there's a band out there sung a song called King Nothing, and so if you destroy it all and you're the king of what, I guess it will be nothing but a mess, pile of rubble. But I'm a kind of guy that I like to prioritize my dangers. Right, and I see that there's a lot of natural disasters out there that basically are going to catch up to us. And World War III would compound that into much more of a problem than what we got going on, even though what we got going on is bad enough. And so I'm thinking, every time I hear people start saber-rattling and talking about World War III, and I'm reading through the comments of some of the videos, and people are saying, yeah, we just need to go over there and turn Korea into glass, or we just need to go over there to Iran and turn them into glass, you know? And I'm thinking, you guys ain't very bright, are you? I mean, there was a time back in history, I don't know if you remember the oil Arab embargo, you know, and the lines at the gas station, just over something as stupid as oil. And it was ridiculous. Whether it was a scam to make more money or whatever, it's neither here nor there. Even during 9/11, there were lines at the gas station because they were so worried they weren't going to be able to get fuel. It's not necessarily the whole event. It's the way that people react to events such as this that... Imagine this type of scenario. They come on the news that New York's just been bombed, all right? There's a nuclear weapon just went off in New York, and we are literally standing in World War III right now. It's starting. Everybody and his brother would be rushing to the store, grabbing what they could up off the store shelves. They would fill their tanks up with gas and fill their gas cans up with gas. There'd be fights in the lines. Everybody would get all kinds of crazy. The police would try to take care of it. They wouldn't be able to get everything under control because people are in panic mode. And the next thing you know, governors of each one of the states or whatever would call in the National Guard to try to keep order because we just had a nuclear bomb go off in New York. When's the next one going to drop? You know, maybe down here on Kansas City or something like that. You know, nobody knows. We're in World War III. Somebody just nuked us. And so, you know, our forces are out there. They begin to retaliate. The same episode plays out over the near area because now, you know, everything's going to be scarce. We're at nuclear war. Duct tape's going to fly off the shelf, plastic sheeting so you can seal up your house from any radioactive fallout and all that. And there's a lot of the population out there wouldn't even have a clue what to do in any kind of scenario like that. And so I'm thinking, I think all this stuff through, the potentials of from when it very first starts all the way till when we're in full-fledged, everybody's, you know, it's 4th of July and everybody's launching everything they got, you know, hey, launch them if you got them kind of deal. Because whoever's standing after this mess is going to be the king. But what these folks at the top kind of failed to mention was that, sure, in World War II, we dropped a couple atomic bombs. It made one heck of a mess over there for two cities in Japan. All right, well, we're not talking about just a couple atomic bombs now because China's got them, India's got them, Korea's got one, two, or whatever. Iran's trying to get some if they ain't already got them. Russia's got some, and our allies got some. And when it comes down to an all-out nuclear conflict, it's like that. You're going to launch it at your enemy and hope for the best and hope you don't get hit in the process. Some will get shot down, some won't get shot down. But the ecological and economical disaster that's going to unfold the moment this all occurs with a panic in the stock market where it'll crash, literally crash, because nobody's going to know what to bet on and what not because there may not be nothing left tomorrow. Well, that's just the start of the whole deal. When nuclear power plants start going up in smoke and even the conventional coal-fired power plants or hydroelectric dams and all the disasters to come from bombs going off in every doggone direction, you're talking about a chaos unlike anything of biblical proportions that any sane person would not even want even a fraction of this occurring. And so, you know, it sounds bad. And that's because it really could potentially get that bad if it ever got that far. And so the folks up at the top maybe think they got their own bunkers down in there. They're going to be all right. They just run up in their bunkers and come back out when the smoke clears. Uh-uh. It's not going to happen like that. Unfortunately, they didn't pay a close enough attention in science class to understand the full ramifications of a full-on nuclear conflict. We've got, like you said earlier, Barbara, we got target-specific smart bombs, and we've got all kinds of weapons. We got hydrogen bombs. We got weapons that we probably don't even know about, space-age Star Wars kind of weapons. There's a video out there you can go study up. It's called The Rods of God, and essentially they can shoot this big heavy rod down from space, and just by the inertia and the impact will do so much and crazy devastation. It's just insane.
Isn't that a prophecy, a Bible prophecy? The rods of fire coming from the heavens down upon the earth, destruction and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Well, I kind of look back at some of these Bible prophecies. Let's like take Revelations, for example. If you were 2,000 or more years ago and you were writing this book and you're trying to explain something that you saw in a manner that everybody could understand, if you look at some of the things about some of the different, like, look at the stealth bomber. How would you explain that in 2,000 years ago when those things didn't exist? You see what I'm saying here? But
yeah, you know, for the other thing you kind of missed there, and I know you're aware of this, is the weapons of mass destruction.
Yep.
You know, the biological warfare thing. They're really up on that stuff.
Yeah, and that's even scarier than the other. But that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up, because we're talking about nuclear and conventional bombs, but the weapons of mass destruction involving all the genetically modified diseases that are militarized now, they got stockpiles of this stuff around everywhere. All right, well, you start blowing that stuff up, and now you got diseases like you wouldn't believe, and the people that have the cure, They're not likely going to want to share it with you, you know. And you know, by the time you know it starts, and all the plagues and the famine and the pestilence, man, if you really seriously sit down and read the Book of Revelations and you contemplate that actually playing out in real time with your family involved in it, that's kind of disturbing. I never want to see that. I'm hoping that it never occurs. I'm hoping that World War III never occurs, because I understand the ramifications scientifically, socially, mentally. Man.
Well, if you have this type of thing let loose, no matter what it is, the weapons of mass destruction, the nuclear assault, if you have this stuff let loose, okay, on that level, we're hoping, certainly praying that does not happen, but it seems that things are lining up for these possibilities to occur. These possibilities, it's not a this will never happen, because we don't have this type of technology. They have the technology, but so it looks like things, it's a possibility, a big possibility, because who do you have, you know, with their finger on the button, you know, in every country here who has nuclear, and who are these people like Kim Jong-un, who's a little off the charts, you know, mentally, and, you know, some people are even saying that about President Trump, a little off the charts mentally, egotistical, you know, he has to win constantly, and with any threat, you know, well, he'll just push the button. And I'm just saying that this is verging toward a possibility in our time, our lifetime. And that's a scary thing, because you have your life and your life of your family and your children is in the hands of these people. You know, they're not your grandfather, they're not your father or your mother who's going to say, gee, I want to make sure my kids are okay. They don't give a crap about the population.
No, they don't. And, you know, you have people like billionaires like old dog on it, Microsoft, Bill Gates, talking about depopulating the planet and that kind of stuff. But this process of third world war trying to be financially beneficial for them is going to backfire in their face. And if they decide they want to try to depopulate the world under those circumstances, because right now, even though America's got a pretty tough army, you know, probably the supposedly the world number one world related superpower, last standing superpower, you can't underestimate the rogue people or even the terrorist factor of it. You know, while you're trying to fight this guy over here, you got somebody in there dropping dirty bombs in your neighborhood as well. And so it'll get ugly really fast. And it's back during the time when I went to the police academy, there was like stages that you had to go through to escalate your force, to bring it one level above anybody who was trying to be aggressive towards you, so you could continuously keep control. Well, that's also in the military. They will basically keep the level up higher, so they'll trump your conventional bomb with a small nuke, that kind of deal. And this is the way they win wars, you know, flanking the enemy and such, or whatever. But you start.
I just want to say, you know, thinking of the ones who will be fighting the war. These we're looking at now, artificial intelligence, like robotic, nanobot type people that they're creating. You know, like beyond your imagination type of abilities, you know, the super warrior, right?
Yeah.
You know, this is what they're building this stuff, so it's almost like a sci-fi movie. We've seen this all over. But, you know, I want to just point out here about this depopulation thing. You know, we've talked about that and this, the Georgia Guidestones and that message, and is that pointing toward this and Gates and others, the cabal or the elite who are all for depopulation. But don't you think that on this earth here, this beautiful Mother Earth, that there is an abundance of food, abundance of all the necessary things that we would need if we did it right? So you don't have to think we got to get rid of half this population.
Oh, yeah. I say all the time, and people look at me cross-eyed because I say it, because I take it to the streams. I tell people this planet could withstand 9 times the population. There's 9 billion people in the planet right now. And when I say something like that, people look at me all cross-eyed like I'm crazy or I don't know what the heck I'm talking about. But think about this, folks. When nature does what nature does, if a certain population gets too thin, there's infrastructure already in place, like what I mentioned, what the science guys say about fish going belly up. You get too many fish compacted in, the oxygen level drops, fish die off, and then those who survive are the next ones in line, and nature balances that deal back out. It's the same thing with overpopulating. You get too many people crowded into a city, you'll get a disease come in there, it'll wipe out a large part of the population, balance it back out. We will only get as populated as this planet can take before the planet basically levels everything back out. And what you said about abundance, this earth is 3/4 covered in water. You ain't never going to run out of water. Water's the most stable molecule on the planet, and it has a recycling capability through the system that nature's provided to clean it back up, put salt where salt is needed, and so on. All right? And so, with that said, nature's got control over this thing. And for these people to believe themselves to be so superior intelligent that they think, well, if we could keep the world down to 500 million, we'd have a population that we could control. Well, the key word is control. It ain't about freedom. It ain't about your life or your children. And not one of them are volunteering to say, okay, well, the planet's overpopulated, so me and my family, we're going to do the right thing and we're going to euthanize ourselves for all you can live happily ever after. No, it don't go down like that. They're telling the people at the bottom, you need birth control. You need to take this right here so that you don't have any children. China has a 2-child or a 1-child policy. I can't remember what it is anymore. But you
used to be a 1-child policy, and they've just changed it, I think it was a year ago, to allow 2-children policy. But here's the thing, what's going on there, and this is taking a little left turn here, but talking about you need to take this pill to abort this life here in China, if the girl was born, they'd have a bucket of water right next to the birthing room and put that baby girl right in that bucket of water.
My God, that would be the end. Terrible.
Well, because the boys are preferred. And now, Patty and I were just looking at this link yesterday. This Professor Savage, her name is. Now, listen to her name. It's Savage. Professor Savage, this is in the UK, is saying that women should be able to abort a baby if it's not the gender that they want. So now there's this controversy about a lot of the you know, gynecologists or pediatric hospitals are trying to determine. Some of them now are not telling their patients, the pregnant woman, what the gender of the baby is, because you know they have that ultrasound where, oh, I want to know what is it? Is it a boy? Is it a girl? You know, this is not nature. This is not natural. But now they have this technology. Again, it's all about control. We can control everything of nature, and we will tell you what the gender of your baby is. Now, there are some choices being made that people are saying, well, I don't want a girl. I must have a boy. I have two girls. I want a boy. Or I don't want a girl at all. Let me just abort this baby. And this is starting to happen. And this professor who is involved with the British Medical Association is saying, she is advocating that a woman should be able to abort her baby if it is the gender that she does not prefer.
That's terrible. That's terrible on the scale. My mind just can't wrap my head around that. My mind just won't allow me to. That's a life, man.
Well, here's where we're going. You see, this has been happening. You know, I've been sort of like struggling with this whole thing, you know, because I feel everyone, women and men, have a right to their own decision, their own determination about what they do or do not with their own body. If I want to take a certain medication, that's my choice. If I choose not to, that's my choice. I have that right. So I sort of am in that field of pro-choice. And I feel that, you know, I'm not judging people. That's not my way. But, you know, recently I've been kind of questioning this because I'm seeing a level of turning away from morals, the downfall of morals, not only in this country but throughout the world. And I'm looking at these pieces and I'm thinking we're really sliding downhill away from, you know, Creator, away
from...
Yeah,
I was thinking,
you know,
that same thought about 5 or 10 minutes ago while we were talking about some things about... If you take my generation and your generation and the generations prior to that, there's a lot of things that occur in modern society that would not have occurred back then. You know, if it
well,
did...
Well, so, yeah, so now we have, this appearing, you know, the easy taking of a life, and then there's the statement that she said, if I can quote it correctly, because I don't have the link in front of me. She said that in the womb or the embryo is not a human. Okay? She said it's a potential human.
Potential.
It's a potential human. Now, how do you wrap your mind around that? Because to me, that advocates that it's okay. It's okay then to take that life if it's a girl and you don't want a girl because it's a potential human. And there's always been this argument about when does the soul spirit appear in the embryo, right? I mean, this has been an argument between, you know, different groups of people for eons here, ever since they started this, you know, we can just abort this child. And I know that abortions in the past, before they were legal, really took the lives of people. I mean, it was done with coat hangers in the back. There was infection. I mean, it was a horrible thing. And in the circumstances we're talking about, all kinds of, all levels of people, not just poor people who needed to have an abortion. And I'm using the word needed because it's in their experience. They need to have this abortion because they've got, you know, five or six kids and they're poor, they have no partner, they're on their own, and on and on and on, and they can't feed that child. But this is across the board, not just poor people, even wealthy people who determine, well, I don't want another child because it'll kill my, ruin my figure. So what I'm talking about here is this spike, this laissez-faire about, yeah, let's just go the abortion way because it'll ruin my figure and I want to be out there dating, or I don't want a girl because I prefer a boy. And now the word is from this professor, well, it's a potential human anyway in there, so yeah, that take the guilt away, you don't have to feel guilty. But I'm looking at the morals thing. I'm looking at the spike here of such horrible, stunning behaviors of people about life, what they're doing to infants, what people are doing to infants. Forget the abortion thing. I'm talking about people violating. You have pedophilia, but you have violence upon babies and infants and murder, beating up. I mean, it's like a nightmare out there with this stuff spiking. And then you have all other types of things that show, where are the morals going? They're downhill. They're way underground. They're really,
well, here's,
they're gone.
Here's another layer to that, as far as morals go. There was a undercover deal. I don't know if you've heard Project Veritas, but they went into some of these abortion clinics to talk about the stem cell research, and they were literally talking about selling body parts, stem cells, to companies to do research on.
Yeah, I did see that sting operation there, that video, and it led into a more stunning and horrible, discussion there while she's eating a salad, talking about taking the brains while the certain thing is going on, because you have to handle this carefully and because you need the brain. But, you know, I just heard something else that'll blow your mind. I just listened to Max Egan on TCT, and he was talking about, because he spent a lot of time in Palestine. He has people there and so on, and he's talking about the abductions going on there of young children, the Israel's abducting Palestinian children. And he said that Israel is one of the biggest sources for organs in the world.
Oh my God.
Exactly. I didn't know that. I mean, that's what he's saying. I'm just repeating what he's saying. I don't know his sources. I have no idea. But looking at that, okay, morals are gone.
Well, unfortunately, in this day and age, we can't discount any possibility, because even if you just go back to what you were talking about a second ago about the, the way that they're talking about, if you don't want a boy or a girl, you can just get rid of the baby. Well, that's bad enough.
And yeah, but, you know, this has sort of been a standard in far out or way out kind of primitive societies or villages, let's say in China.
Yeah.
Okay. But this is, we're talking modern civilization here. This is still going on in certain areas, you know, all over the world, where there's a preference and the boy seems to be, you know, the preference, you know, and the girls, even if you have a girl child in India and a boy child, the boy child gets the food. The girl child doesn't get the food.
Man, if I had a little sister, I'd be feeding my little sister. I would go hungry before I'd let my little sister die.
Yeah, but you know, when you're fed as a child, and I don't mean literally fed food, if you're fed information, that's a system then that controls you.
Oh,
and you're going to follow suit because you're privileged. It feels better to be privileged rather than starving.
Yeah, I know a prime example of what you're talking about. Yeah, I got you all the way. There's a video where this father had raised his son up to believe that men were higher than women, and this boy was talking to his mom like a dog. And if I would have been, man, my mom would have clocked me. She'd have sent me into the next dimension if I'd have ever talked to my mom the way this boy was talking to his mom. You know, and it ain't that my mom is a violent, but she was raised up to be respectful and teach everybody respect for each other and so on. I came from a really good family.
Talking about the downfall of society. We are talking literally about the downfall of societal ways and the moving away from the way of God, Creator, or the teachings of Yeshua, the teachings of Buddha, the teachings of, you know, all the sacred holy ones that came down to earth to try to set us right on the right path. Even the white buffalo calf woman brought the same message. You know, the respect for the women and the children and standing together in unity and being stewards of the earth and walking in a sacred manner and being in prayer and following the way we call the Red Road or the Chunkaluta. There's a certain way of being, of living, to hold things in harmony and balance, and that's our job. But now you have, this is like a free-for-all. You can do whatever you want, you know. That's why I say it's a downfall of society, yeah, and I'm not a very well-read Bible person, but I do know my instincts tell me we're in serious trouble because of what I see happening all over the world.
I want to tell you about a really disturbing conversation that I had with the younger generation. Just happened a couple days ago. I was sitting down there talking to them about things going on in the world and asking them basically trying to pick their brain to see what they knew and what they thought, you know, on things. And the final outcome of that deal was, I just don't care, you know. I don't care what's going on in the world. As long as it ain't bothering me, I just don't care. And so they don't look. They don't know. You can't ask them who the president is, because majority of them don't even know who the president is. You can't ask them about current events, because they just don't care. And the only information that they got is where maybe in passing they walk past the TV just in time to hear one of the communist news networks tell them some propaganda, and that's all they got, and that's the first thing they'll throw out there. Oh, yeah, I heard about this, you know. I heard Trump's a racist or whatever, you know. Without knowing the guy or doing anything, or, you know, I'm not sitting here trying to advocate for Trump. I'm just saying, before you accuse anybody of anything, you need to do a lot of research and look at the past and look at the present and weigh out everything out and then make an informed decision. But if you're just repeating what you heard somebody else say, then basically you're just a mockingbird. You just repeated what, because you heard it, you know. Don't make it true. It just, you see what I'm saying?
I see that happening all the time, and that is, I think, part of the agenda, is to keep people in that phase of just spewing out lies and misinformation to create this energy, you know, of rage and anger and all that stuff, despair. You know, and I have a friend who's a teacher, and she told me, I don't know, a year ago or so, how the kids in her classroom were saying that they don't expect the world to last, so they don't really care, you know. So these kids are drugging, they're cutting themselves. I mean, they come from very disturbed families anyway, but she's in that kind of a school, you know, for kids who are really troubled. But these kids feel hopeless because they see what's going on, or they see that wacky news or whatever. They don't have any hope. And they're actually saying they don't care what happens to the earth, because everybody's going to die anyway, and it's okay. They just expect this is going to happen. They have no hope.
That's sad. That is so sad, because, you know, my daughter's, you know, up there a little bit, and she's got granddaughters 5 and 6 years old, or she got daughters that are 5 or 6 years old, and if her thoughts on the world is that she didn't care about, you know, current events or what's going on in the world, only cared about what's going on in her life at the moment, you know, friends and that kind of stuff, imagine what those kids are going to be thinking. You see, it's a slow deterioration. Paul Harvey said it back in 1965, and I play that on this show a lot, because he talks about, if I were the devil, what he would do. Well, he said that in 1965, but you see and hear every single thing that he said in that broadcast, you can see it playing out in reality today. And it's been going on since he said that, but it's escalated to the extent now to where normally things that would have been considered taboo are just mainstream. You got talks about men using the bathroom with little girls. Like that's okay. No, man, as a father from my generation, if I see a man dressed like a lady going up into the dang bathroom, I say, hold on, brother, you just wait till my daughter's up out of there. You know, I don't care what you do from that point on, but as long as my daughter in there, you ain't going in there. That's all there is to it. Now, that may make me sound like a hateful person, but I was grown up to protect my kids. I even had my son make sure if we were at a restaurant, my son's older than his sister, and I'd have him walk her to the bathroom and back and keep an eye, make sure nobody, kidnapped her or anything like that, because the world was getting that crazy. You know, sometimes I'd get up and walk her to the bathroom and back, but depending on what was going on at any given time, I might ask my son, because my son was pretty smart and brave, and I could trust that he would keep an eye on her. But, you know, if you're a father and you got to live in the fear of somebody snatching your kid, you see what I'm saying?
Well, I do, and the thing that I want to look at here is I want to look at this from two perspectives, okay? I hear what you're saying about if you see a man dressed as a woman going into the bathroom, you wouldn't want your daughter to be in there because there's a potential for a crazy person or a pedophile or someone who's, and I'm not saying, here's where we have to also observe, not everyone who's choosing to dress as a female who's male mean that they're a pedophile. Okay, there are those. These are potentials, and this is what we have to be careful of. Not everybody who wears a certain color, whatever, is that. Or whatever, you know, not everybody who listens to a certain type of music must be that kind of a person. But there's all these potentials, you see, that there are very disturbed people out there. You know, and this is what we have to be very clear and conscious and conscientious and not lump everybody into one category. So just because you choose this, you must be that. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand, and I agree with you. But the way that mainstream media, and from the time we grow up, we base our decisions on things that we're told. And so, you know, I'm told that there's people kidnapping kids, and I'm told that there's, strange people out there. And so, you know, I kind of look at the guy that wants to go in the girl's bathroom a little different than I would the guy that, you know, is going in the men's room or whatever.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
So I'm not.
I feel it's important that we as a society be very careful about how we lump one type of person into a belief about that they must be this, they have to be that because they're doing this or that. I'm just saying, because there is a lot of hate mongering going on. There is a lot of confusion about, you know, gender. There is a lot of confusion about religions. There is, you know, there's all this hate mongering and separation going on, a push for the people to hate each other, to be against a certain color person or what they're wearing, what they're dressing, what they choose, their lifestyle. I feel we have to be very careful because this hate thing and this violence upon others, just because the media is telling us or somebody else is telling us that they are this and they are that, you know, this is where I think we must be careful.
I agree. You know, I'm not into trying to hate nobody. I just, like I said, we get perceptions. Like, prime example, it used to be a day that you'd drive down the road, you'd see somebody that was broke down or maybe hitchhiking down the road, and you didn't have no problem pulling over to see if they needed some help and wanting to do that. But then the mainstream media starts talking about all these serial killers and everybody's out to get you and that kind of deal. And it got to the point where, you know, because people's lives are so busy or whatever, they would literally just pass somebody on the side of the road without even trying to see if they were okay. it might have been the best person in the world. Potentially the worst, but, you know, nonetheless, you didn't even, you just judged them like the homeless situation. People will look down on people who are sitting out there on the side of the road with a sign that says, you know, need some help, some food, or whatever like that. You know, me personally, I'll go over there. I don't care what the purpose is. I'll give them the money. And, you know, if they go to use it for drugs or liquor, I'm sorry that they made that choice. But nonetheless, I didn't judge them because of the way that they looked. I just gave them something to help them out, and hopefully it did help them out. You see what I'm saying?
Because you're a compassionate person, because you have love and compassion in your heart, and this is what's missing. This is what I'm saying. We turn our backs on people who may need help, and we look down upon them, and we put them in a category that they're an alcoholic or a drug abuser or whatever, and they're homeless. That makes something wrong with them. Why don't they get their act together or whatever? We start judging people. And this is where I think, you know, society has been led deliberately, and I keep emphasizing this, how are we as a society being led into such a horrible state against or upon our fellow humans?
Do you have Raymond in your contacts?
No.
Well, I've been trying to add him to the call. He's been wanting to try to get in, but I can't, for some reason. Skype ain't giving me the option.
Well, give me his Skype in my Skype. Maybe I can pull him in.
Okay, I think I sent it in the room there. I drug it over there anyway.
I don't have it in my Skype here. Good. I don't have it, though.
All right. Well, his screen name is Raymond Head.
Wait, I'm trying to find a spot here for my own... where are you? that's interesting. My Skype is...
how about this? Let me drop this call. I'll call him back and add you to the call. See if that works.
Okay. Alrighty.
Okay. Stay tuned, folks. We're shuffling Skype again. Alright. I'll be right back.
Oh.
Okay, hang on there. I'm trying to add somebody else in here. And I just had them. Doggone it. Yeah, well, you're listening live, folks. I just made a mess out of everything. Let me throw on a quick tune and get this resolved. You're listening to...
If I were the Prince of Darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness. And I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree. The. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray, after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies, and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
Hear ye, hear ye. Jesus is the turtle. All those working to fill the turtle and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join the chat room, become one of the honorary knights, it's simple as just coming in there and helping to post links to pertinent information and such. And if you want to become an honorable knight of the round table, like Barbara Three Crow, who's in here, and Honorable Knight Raymond Head, who's in here as well, we're talking today about, World War III, should it happen? And we're also gone down the road to talk about how the morality of humans and, we're going down a bad path right now. While we were doing that old Skype debacle again, trying to find out who we could get online and can't, whatever, we got it sorted out now. Looks like Thomas joined us too, that's cool. And so before that, Barbara was talking about a crossroads that we're standing on, and I'd like to let her explain. You ready for that, Barbara?
Yeah, I will do my best. You know, I was speaking about prophecy of indigenous people and also biblical prophecy, because a lot of these prophecies are in alignment. And how I see it is that we are at a crossroads, and I was saying how different periods in our lifetime, we meet a crossroad, and we're at the fork of this crossroad now in this timeline, and that this is the time of choosing. You know, you either choose to go down that pathway or you choose that pathway, and we're at that fork in the road right now, timeline wise, because we see, if you're awake, or if you're even halfway awake, or just curious, you should see the development of situations and circumstances like Shaziz and I were talking about, this possibility of World War III, for instance, and the downfall of humanity moral-wise. You know, the morals have gone out the window, it seems to me, and I see this spiking of behavior throughout the world, you know, that is really pretty stunning. But actually that was a prophecy given to me quite a few years ago, and it basically said there will come a time when we will be so shocked and stunned by the behavior of our fellow brothers and sisters, it will just shock us. And I see that today, incidences and circumstances, the behavior of people, the choices that people are making, and certainly it has to do with morals, it has to do with goodness and compassion, it has to do with the turning away from God, from Creator, from compassion and love and caring for each other, and so you have this, you know, this whole system is really shifting into something quite stunning, remarkably stunning, and it has to do with, to me, it has to do with a great evil that has appeared. It's been ever present, but now it seems to be ramping up. So yeah, we are at a crossroads. Are we going to choose the light or the dark? That's how I see it.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I gave that example earlier how, you know, whenever I was a kid and the way that people used to say yes ma'am, yes sir, and open doors for ladies and stuff like that, and then down the line things just got to where, you know, people weren't doing that anymore. It just seemed like, you know, the example is, there are certain things that were said on radio that were not said on radio and TV that seem to be accepted right now. Such as the B word. I've heard them say it on mainstream TV, the B word. And I'm like, first off, I would never call a lady that, because that's really disrespectful. Alright? And that's the way I was raised, to not be disrespectful. But the fact that
Shaziz, you have the B word, the F word, and the C word.
Yeah.
Now, I remember, because I'm 74, I remember when the F word started to be spewed all over the TV. How shocking this was. This was like mind-blowing. It was stunning for this word to just be flung out, and now it's the norm. See, that's what happens. Let's do this. Let's push it on the people so it will become the norm, and it will be accepted. Let's push this out, and let's keep pushing that out so that people will say, oh, yeah, there's another priest who has, you know, been called a pedophile. Oh, yeah, there's another violent murder. Oh, there's... So that everything like this, so dark and evil and stunning, becomes the norm, people don't even feel anymore. They don't even really identify the level of behavior, the level of out the window, our morals are gone. And we're, this is leading us to one of those pathways. It's not the light, for sure.
Well, there's a terminology out there called, and I'm probably going to not be able to pronounce this right. For some reason, every time I try to say the word desensitize, somebody say that word for me.
Desensitize.
Yes, that's the easier way. That'll work. Okay, an example of this was back during World War I and early World War II, they realized that there were soldiers that were coming back that didn't, never even fired the rifle, not one time. They had the same amount of ammunition that they started with. And that's because their generation was raised that killing was wrong, that it was a bad thing to do. And so they were hesitant to fire on the enemy. Well, they finally had to figure out a way to get around that. Well, they used to train the soldiers to fire at a bullseye target, which is an inanimate object with circles that get smaller in the center. And if you shoot the one in the center called the bullseye, well, then you get a sharpshooter deal and, you know, put it on your nifty uniform and all that. Well, when soldiers kept coming back, some of the best sharpshooters out there never even fired a weapon one time. They didn't take no lives at all. All right, and so they had to figure out a way to get these folks to start firing at the enemy. So they started training them with a black silhouette, which, you know, from a distance, a person looks like a silhouette. You know, all you're seeing is a silhouette out there. You're not seeing, like, looking them right directly in the eyes, and you have to decide to take their life or not. And so they started training them. They started training police officers in the same fashion to get them to fire under pressure. And so after a while, they become desensitized, and it's like mechanical. You just shoot at the other person, you know, and that's that. Whatever. But that same thing is played out in movies and video games and all that, where people are being desensitized to killing other humans. You know, even if it's a zombie, you know, deal, you're running around and the zombies are coming to get you and you're attacking them. You know, it used to be a human, but it's not human anymore, so that makes it all right. And like games like Vice City, where you're running around robbing and raping, looting and pillaging and stealing stuff, you know, it's just a video game, it's no big deal. But in reality, you're being desensitized to being doing things that you normally wouldn't do out there in the real world. It's fun now. You go around and see how much ruckus you can create in this video game. It's a lot of fun. I gotta admit, I played the game. Now when I stole a few cop cars, drove around, smashed into things I wouldn't do in real life. But what happens to that one individual that finally reality and this fantasy kind of, they overlap? You see what I'm trying to say here?
Absolutely, I do. I just want to say, I agree with you, because I think that's the whole agenda, is to desensitize the human population. And we have a younger generation. You know, I didn't grow up on video games and that kind of stuff, but I knew very early on when I saw this focus and this what it was happening to the brainwaves of these children, that it's an addictive behavior. The brain, it's a stimulant, of course. It's a stimulant because it's like you're in a war zone, but it's not real. But you have the gun in your hand at this game, or the button in your hand, and you have to blow this person up, and blood and guts and all kinds of things fly out in these games, and you're becoming desensitized to this type of horror regarding another human being and the choices that you're going to make. And this is a deliberate, folks. This is why I say these games are very dangerous, because they are addictive. I worked with a woman who was so addicted. This was an adult woman. She'd come home from work, she'd get down on her computer, wouldn't even eat. And there she was, sitting there for 8, 9, 10 hours, addicted to these games, and she couldn't get out of it. And now you have children who can't make right decisions because they're so, you know, in this addictive flow. And they don't have the ability to discern reality, you know, from false, you know, from something false or horrible. But I want to just divert back to what you said about opening doors, and then I'll be quiet. You know, there was this whole thing, the feminist movement, you know, and I'm all for women's rights. I'm all for equality for men and women. And I know that it's despairing. And I know that there's a disparity, and that has to change. But this one piece about don't open a door for me if you're a man, because this was the thinking, because you're indicating that I'm a weak person because I'm a woman. You know, I appreciate it when a man opens a door for me, because I think he's respecting me, and he's saying, you know, I'm going to open this door for this woman because I'm respectful of her as a woman. You know, that's a whole other way of looking at it. You know, in the old days, men used to walk on the curb, on the curbside, the roadside, and the woman would be in the interior because he would take the first hit. In indigenous ways, the men would go forward. If they were traveling, the women and children would stay in the back because the warriors would be up front in order to, you know, meet an obstacle or whomever it was or whatever it was. They stood in the front line to basically protect the women and children, you know. So I just wanted to put that in.
Well, I was raised like that, and it's not that I think women are weak or anything. I honestly believe that women are sacred. I believe that the good Lord, the creator of the world, put the women down here. You know, without women, you don't have no children. You know, you don't have no companionship. I believe women are a gift to man. And vice versa. And so I want to protect my lady. I'm going to walk between her and any potential danger, and my children as well, you know. And I think that, you know, if you are a feminist, you should at least give me as a man that courtesy to, you know, be respectful enough to care that I don't want anything happen to my family. It's not that I'm trying to try to put women in their place or children or whatever. It's that I love them that much that I would really literally sacrifice my own personal safety or life if necessary to take care of them. They're my family. And I don't know why society has gotten away from that. You know, I've heard guys say, well, you know, if a woman's going to be man enough to punch me in the face, I'm going to knock her out. You know, where does it stop? You know, it's like every single generation wants to top the one prior to that, and next thing you know, you got the men and women out there fist fighting in the front yard, and they say they're in love. Well, my version of love ain't painful. I know that's just the way I see things. But on these games and TV shows, and I know some folks will argue with, you know, it's just entertainment or whatever. You've got young minds that are watching this stuff, and they glorify war. And when I hear a little child talk about, I want to be a soldier when I grow up, he doesn't know at that point what the full ramifications of being a soldier entails. He doesn't know that once that bullet leaves the end of that barrel of the gun, there's no way to pull it back. And it's a life-changing experience if you ever have to take another person's life, whether it be for self-defense or whatever reason that you think necessary, you got to do that. You know, it's a done deal. And you'll have to carry that around.
But you don't know what that life-changing experience is until you have been there, you see. This is the whole point. You could say that to somebody, but they don't understand what it is, that life-changing. And it's very big, and it's hard to describe and explain it. It's traumatizing, you know, on many levels.
Yep.
You know, that's where PTSD comes in, is, you know, all the horrors, the terrible things that you have to wind up doing, going to war for the corporation that needs your body. You know, they don't care about you. And half the wars, I would say the majority of wars, have nothing to do with our country here being attacked by, or, you know, there's no threat here. They're making that a threat. They need terrorists. You know, they need the terrorists. The terrorists is very crucial to keep everybody spinning in that. And, yeah, we have to go to war and send your son and your daughter to war to a foreign country that has nothing to do with the threat here to this country. It's all about corporations and what they're going to dig up in that other country, or their new world order that they have to control those other countries to fall into place. That's how I look at it. And I want to just say hi to Tom, because
I could expand a little bit on what you just said.
Thank you.
Send soldiers to another country to fight and so forth and so on. Think about this a minute. You're in your neighborhood and somebody's attacking your neighbor, trying to hurt him so that they can steal a car, his money, whatever. I know you didn't mean that. You're not supposed to jump in there and help your neighbor. So when that's why I wanted to bring that up. I don't want people out there to take you the wrong way. I know you didn't mean it that way.
Well, okay? That's one of the things that we got going on out here as far as how information goes to and fro, is that, you know, especially in the mainstream media, there's a lot of cherry picking and words going on. There's a lot of twisting the words going on. And so when we gather together, we got to try to convey everything in a sense that, you know, common sense. The World War III is not a good idea. Period. There's no, you can't find any good justification for World War III. And the examples that we've laid out through this entire show of the way that the society has been desensitized and moralities have fallen to an all-time low, I've even heard the argument that, well, you know, it's now because you have access to the internet, it was always been this bad or whatever. But in my own personal life, it's never always been this bad. I've watched it literally for 51 years of my life. You know, a couple of you guys and gals are older than I am right now, so you've seen a lot more than that. But I've been in positions to where I've seen some things that no man or woman should ever have to see. And I carry that in my heart because I don't want to forget what I saw, because I don't want it to ever happen to anybody else. And so I get on here on the Knights of the Round Table, and I gather the most brilliant minds and the biggest hearts in the world, and I put them out here to start talking to each other and talking to the world, to open up a dialogue, to point out what should be the blatantly obvious. But at some point in time, when you got people that are sitting there on the sidelines watching, rooting, one of the scariest things that I ever saw was when Hillary Clinton, when they killed Gaddafi, Hillary Clinton was on a news broadcast, and she was telling somebody, and she was like all happy, and she was wringing her hands and going, "Oh, we came, we saw, and he's dead, you know, and ha ha ha," that kind of deal. But yeah, you got to back off and you got to listen to what she just said. That was a life. That was somebody. Regardless of what you thought of that individual, or whether you knew the whole background story on why he was killed the way he was, and the way that they killed him. That shouldn't happen. There's a thing in America where we talk about innocent until proven guilty, that you're due a trial. You get to stand before a trial of your peers. He didn't get no trial of his peers. He got murdered in the street. Whether you think he's a bad guy or not, we just witnessed a man get murdered in the street, and we witnessed who was supposedly a wannabe president or a representative of the governments of the United States wringing her hands in joy and saying that we came, we saw, and he's dead. I was so mortified when I saw that, because that, to me, that is pure evil. How could anyone celebrate the death of another human being? Even when it's the worst possible person and they end up on death row and they go through the deal. All right, justice is served, but there ain't no time for celebration. It's not, you know, you don't go in there, I'm joyful, he got murdered, he got what he deserved, I'm so happy about it, I'm going to go out and have a party or whatever. All right, maybe some people feel that way, but me personally, I think if it ever comes down to a life being taken for any purpose under the sun, all of humanity just lost a big portion of their soul. And I'm sorry, I'm not into capital punishment. I don't believe in the death penalty. You know, even under the most extreme circumstances, I mean, life in prison, okay, well, we could argue that that's so inhumane that you should just put them out of their misery and kill them.
You know, I've said several times on this program, I'm not for capital punishment either. However, I do believe in pruning your orchard.
Well, unfortunately, there are circumstances
out there that justifiably need to be exterminated. They don't need to be punished by killing. You cannot punish somebody by killing them. To punish somebody is to try to give them a chance to correct what they've done wrong. But if they cannot be corrected, then they should be exterminated, eliminated from the orchard.
Well, I understand your point of view. I'm just like... I got my own views on life, and maybe they're way out there in the world or whatever, but, you know, I kind of take things literally. Like, you know, when I say my vows to my wife to get married before the eyes of God, I took that serious. I meant it, you right? Well, same thing when my God told me, "Thou shalt not kill," you know, I'm like not wanting to kill. You know, I understand, I've heard all the arguments from everything about there. If you read the Bible from front to back, there are some brutal times in there. There's some brutal events. But the morals that I'm talking about inside there, the teachings that Jesus talked about, you know, loving thy neighbor and stuff like that, you know. The world without no kind of morals. Think about the world without the Ten Commandments never even came into play whatsoever. They never existed. Nobody's ever heard of them. People are running around doing whatever it is that they want. There ain't really no fallback unless you make somebody mad and they do you in or whatever, beat you up. Imagine a world with absolutely no golden rule whatsoever.
But that's what's happening now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that's what's happening now. And, you know, for me, I really don't agree with capital punishment. And we're talking about a human life. You know, I don't care. And it is horrible what some people do. And, of course, our nature... is that we want revenge, and revenge makes us ill. body, mind, and spirit. Hatred makes us ill. It's a sickness energetically that affects us. And when you take a life, you are playing God. And I think there's a lot of people playing God out there. And, you know, I don't know what the circumstances would be. But I have seen people whose certain cases where they have forgiven a person who has taken the life of a loved one. And because they say they are forgiving that person because for their own health and well-being, because they do not want to harbor hatred or revenge, and they do not want to be responsible for taking another human being's life. And, you know, our system, our society has gotten to the point where it's okay now and easy just to take another person's life regardless of what they have done, the wrongs that they have done. And I think that most people, I think the majority of people, I'm going to say a percentage of people can be rehabilitated with things if they get the right kind of help. And that's just my feeling, and I've seen that happen. But just recently there was a state here, I can't remember which one it was, they were just rushing to execute four or several prisoners who were on death row because they didn't want to, because the particular chemical that they were going to use was going to be running out. So they were rushing to execute these men on death row in a hurry. Let's hurry up because it's the chemical is going to be running out here. We won't be able to get that chemical anymore, which, by the way, isn't a foolproof product they found out that really does take a life immediately. They're suffering with this particular drug, and that has been proven. And you have a person there all strapped down. And I heard a boy talking about witnessing his father's execution in prison, and how this was, I don't remember the prisoner's name, but this was all over the place about how he, for 25, 30 minutes, he was writhing in pain. And his son was there witnessing this, and he said it was the most horrible thing he has ever witnessed, the pain and, you know, horror that his father was experiencing, this slow, slow death. And, you know, regardless of what that his father had done, this is trauma energetically. This is an energy that is roiling around. I'm talking about what we are not seeing, what we are not aware of, but these are energies and frequencies that are affecting everything, and these are not high frequencies. These are dark, dark, evil, heady energies that are really affecting the whole. And that's what I'm talking about. You know, I don't think that we should be playing God, and that's the problem. Same thing with scientists playing God now and manipulating nature, manipulating the Mother Earth, manipulating humans, the genome. Everybody's out there playing God. Where is this bringing us? You know, this is the downfall of morals and higher consciousness. You know, that's just my perspective. Well, you know, I understand the feeling of rage, and I understand the feeling of an eye for an eye, but I think we have to come to our senses, because that's how we wound up in Iraq, because everybody was all riled up. Weapons of mass destruction are there. That was a lie. I knew it was a lie. The Twin Towers was a manipulated game player. I knew that. Taking everybody to war, ramping everybody up, you know, if you're for this country, if you're with us, you know, you'd be with us for going to war and killing all these innocent people over there in a country that, you know, didn't have weapons of mass destruction, and everybody was ramped up. And if you said, I don't think we should go to war, well, you were unpatriotic. You were not an American. This is where we've come to, you know. Instead of saying, wait a second, let's shift to a higher vibration. Let's turn the other cheek. Let's lead the way for all of humanity, you know, in a different way, rather than going to war, rather than violating others, taking innocent lives and keeping the war machine going. We missed that opportunity. And now everybody's moving towards, oh, World War III might be coming. Oh, World War III. Are we going to have World War III? Like, this is a game on your computer.
Yeah.
This is real life we're talking about, how easy it is to take a life.
Think about
how easy it is to play God.
Think about being the President of the United States as the chief executive of all the military and law enforcement, and you have to be the one to give the order to send all your men and women overseas to do battle with somebody. Now, you may not be the one out there pulling the trigger, but you sent the entirety of your army over there to do the destruction. So how would that weigh on you as an individual? Barbara, if you were President of the United States, how could you justify sending your military over there? I couldn't, honestly. You know, I used to think about what it'd be like to be President of the United States, but we would have to literally be under full-fledged attack where we had no other alternative but to defend ourselves. Otherwise, I couldn't in good conscience say, let's go over there. We may have some collateral damage in the mix or whatever. I don't think the average Joe even thinks that far. I don't think the average Joe thinks about what the president would be thinking at the time, what he had to order or even push the button and have some men turn the key to launch a nuclear bomb that's going to kill thousands, if not millions, of people. How could you live with that, you know?
Well, you know, it's just like the bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima and then Nagasaki, which was, you know, totally not necessary either one, because if you really read and do research, the war really had ended. They had already acquiesced, but they had to test this bomb. That's not in my backyard, so let's do it. You know, and to me, that was one of the most horrific things to be ever done by other human beings upon others. And, you know, there's a whole theory, again, about World War II, that this was also a setup. I kind of feel that we have to really know the machine, the war mind machine, the corporate machine that is the warmongers. And we're seeing this in the Middle East. We're seeing it with Korea. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, that man is a nutcase, you know, but you're talking nuclear war. And, I mean, I don't fully have the answer there in that case for that Kim Jong-un or Kim Jong-un. That man is a maniac, you
Hold
know, and he's a very dangerous...
Hold that thought for a second, Barbara. I want to put something in perspective for people to be thinking while you're talking. I want you to keep saying what you're saying, but I want people to put something in perspective while you're listening to Barbara talk. I stood literally in Hiroshima, and I stood literally in Nagasaki. There's a couple of museums where they show what occurred during that time that those bombs went off. They have a wall over there that literally has what appears to be a shadow on the wall. The heat was so intense that it literally burned these people right straight into the wall. I mean, there is a outline of a full human body that is scorched right into the wall. You can go to there to this very day to those museums and you can look and see. You can see the devastation of the twisting of big iron steel beams that were twisted around like they were butter. That's a lot of power. I'm sorry I interrupted you, Barbara, but I had to put that perspective out there while you're saying what you're saying, because I want people to grasp the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I know that people are saying, there's a lot of people that are saying, well, they deserved it because they attacked us first. What did they deserve? The innocent people and children and women and children and men over there in their towns in the city of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they were innocent people. That gives us the right to annihilate people. And yeah, I saw those pictures that you're talking about.
Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, attacked the United States.
What'd you say?
Is there anybody out there that even knows why Japan attacked the United States?
That's a good question.
It started about 10 or 15 years before they actually attacked. Japan was in the business of conquering the whole entire Asian area. And the United States stepped in and put an embargo and a boycott on them and surrounded their island and refused to allow them to import oil. Japan has no oil whatsoever. They have to import it, and they were conquering other nations that had oil. when the United States put an embargo against them to where they could not import oil, they had to do something. They needed for their alcohol when Indians come in. Japan had no oil. So they made alcohol, and that's what their plane flew on. I mean, people need to study history. You can't just go back and say, oh, they shouldn't have dropped the bomb.
Right.
Well, the war would have lasted another 3 months. We would have lost 150,000 American lives, and the only way we could have done that is to kill 150,000 of them. The atomic bomb ended the war. It may have killed a lot of Japanese civilians, but civilians were brainwashed to the point that no way could the United States have actually landed on the island of Japan and it not be a fight. And you would have had to fight women and children because they were ready to fight to the death. The bomb was a nasty weapon. It was a very nasty weapon. But it ended the war 3 months early and saved hundreds of thousands of lives.
Well, I can't...
On both sides.
I can't answer for all of what occurred back in that day. All I'm trying to point out to people today is that what happened back then, here's where you got to get a grip on it. It's not just the military that's going to be affected by this. It's going to be everyone. It's going to be your children, your children's children. It's going to be everyone.
And
that's what happened over there. These folks were walking to work or school or whatever, and when that bomb went off, it literally incinerated them and left a permanent mark on a wall outlining the shape of their body. When I saw that, man, I can't even begin to tell you how profoundly that affected me, that we actually had, you know, that go on in our world.
I'm not saying the bomb was a good idea. I'm just saying that it may have reasoning behind it other than the fact that the American citizen is a rotten, low-down scumball because he dropped the bomb and killed a couple of
people. No, I'm not saying that either. Look, here's the thing. There's a whole lot of anti-American and I hate America kind of sentiment. America's got a lot of good things that they've done. They got a lot of bad things that they've done. So is every other nation out there. We've got to get to a point in time where we don't repeat the stupidity of the past.
Exactly. I agree with that totally. But until then, we have to do what we've got to do. And the United States is not the United States. It's people pulling together. And we have good and we have bad.
If we get to a third world scenario, it's not going to play out like everybody thinks it's going to play out.
It isn't.
It's going to be so much more worse than your mind can really comprehend. There's so many different potential scenarios. And we could literally be like standing right now, literally in the beginning of the Third World War because of all the different conflicts going on, all the different scandals and all this kind of stuff there. You know, when things begin to escalate, they're going to escalate at such a rapid pace that it's going to overwhelm every single living soul on this planet because you're not going to know from 1 minute to the next if tomorrow is going to show up. And that's a fact. We got some disasters that we talked about here earlier, and on yesterday's show we also talked and touched on them as well, as far as the Fukushima incident and the BP oil spill. Now, magnify this. When we went over to attack Saddam over there in Iraq, they started burning off their oil fields because they figured that's what we were coming to get their oil fields. They let them on fire. They had mutual assured destruction. They wanted to make sure we weren't going to get control of them if they lost the war. And it was a war. It wasn't just a conflict. It was a war. Anytime somebody's getting shot, it's a war. That's all there is to it.
Yep.
You shoot your neighbor, you're at war. Well, they lit that up. Now, the environmental travesty that came out after that, it was never talked about. What was going on in Fukushima, it's still ongoing today. 6 years after that, they still don't have it resolved. Over there, the BP oil spill, they're still pouring Corexit into the water, which is creating an environmental disaster of biblical proportions. Now, imagine that magnified worldwide to where now the enemy's over there blowing up nuclear power plants over here, blowing up hydroelectric dams and all the infrastructure around, and we're doing the same thing over on their side. Everybody gets knocked back into the Stone Age. We got environmental disasters worldwide. Why would anyone, even in jest, even as a joke, why would anyone want to joke about what that would... let's go to World War III. Let's turn this country into glass. In that country, just like in your country, there's some children standing over there, minding their own affairs, possibly walking to school, and that scenario that I explained about that person burned onto the wall will play out with that child there. Now, does anybody on this panel right here think that that would be something that you could live with on your conscience, like I was rooting for the war kind of thing? Anybody?
No. I'm not rooting for the bomb. I'm just saying that we weren't. It's not as plain and simple as it seems.
Yeah, I respect you for your decision and your thoughts on the deal. All of us got our own personal views on things, whether good or bad. But we're just trying to sort through the whole mess, and we're trying to get a grip on reality to the extent where we can tell people, look, you got to pay attention what's going on out here. Our society is losing its morality. We're getting so far away from who we believe to be our creator or lack thereof or whatever. Nonetheless, without morals in this world, and it's Katie bar the door, every man for himself, do what you like. It's like Aleister Crowley said, do as thou wilt or whatever. I don't want to live in that world. I want my children to be able to walk somewhere in safety. Raymond, you remember when you was a child, when you was young, say maybe 10 years old, you could walk around your neighborhood and not have to worry about things. It was pretty safe in your neighborhood, wasn't it?
Well, not really.
Minus the occasional bully.
The neighborhood I grew up in, there were at minimum of 2 killings, 5 rapes, and 25 muggings a week.
Well, then you got a terrible neighborhood. I grew up in a great neighborhood.
Well, yes, I was. 1 in 5 kids that were raised in that neighborhood did not get out alive. They were killed before they were 18 years old. That's the neighborhood I grew up in.
Can somebody add Barry Prince to the call?
Yeah, I'll try.
I'm trying to get in. Anyway, basically what I'm saying...
I want to just reiterate here. I want to go back to Japan.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because months before the end of the war, Japan's leaders recognized that defeat was inevitable, and a new government headed by Kentaro Suzuki took office with the mission of ending the war. And they were working towards doing this long before the bomb was dropped. That's why I'm saying this did not have to happen. And it was only after the war that the American public learned about Japan's efforts to bring the conflict to an end. That's what I'm telling you, people.
Well, like I said, with every single conflict, including what happened after 9/11, we got information down where they pretty much tried to rally American and the troops and say, look, they attacked us, we're going to go get them, we're going to mop them all. We got this war against terror, we got this war against drugs and all this kind of stuff. And we got the information from them, the people at the top of the deal, the people from the mainstream media, and so everybody's opinions that are going on right now, we didn't get the true history. We didn't know about 9/11 and the real facts until after the supposed report came out, and it just didn't seem to add up. So these folks at the top who are playing this game of chess with the people of the world, not just American citizens, but people in all nations out there, they're playing a game of chess with you.
That's right. They're playing a board game, and we're all falling into lockstep like it's okay. 90,000 people were killed immediately. Another 40,000 were injured, many whom died in protracted agony from a radiation sickness. 3 days later, a second atomic strike on the city of Nagasaki killed another 37,000 people and injured another 43. Between the two bombings, you know, this is what happened. And then they kept bombing. Here's the other thing that I didn't know. that actually on March 9, 1945, a wave of 300 American bombers struck Tokyo then, killing 100,000 people, dropping nearly 1,700 tons of bombs. The warplanes ravaged much of the capital city, completely burning out 16 square miles and destroying a quarter of a million structures, and a million residents were left homeless.
My God.
Now, May, 11 weeks later, came the greatest air raid on the Pacific War, when 520 giant super fortress bombers unleashed 4,500 tons of incendiary bombs on the heart of the already battered Japanese capital, generating gale force winds, and on and on and on. So I'm sorry, I just don't agree with this had to be.
Yeah.
The atomic bombs could have been avoided. And it is... This is from the Institute for Historical Review, and I popped that into the chat. If you really want to find out, I'm sorry. I just think that this is so inhumane, what is going on, and they're just leading us into these situations. Like, now, where are we heading? Because we're talking about it.
Yeah.
You know,
Let me tell you guys a story. In 1984, I was sitting in Yokosuka, Japan, and I was out. You know, as a Navy sailor, I was out wandering around and checking out the landscape, and I sat down at this bench near one of these beer machines, and I sat down, and I bought me a beer out of the machine. I'm sitting on the park bench, and I'm drinking me a beer, and this elderly man walks up, and he's obviously Japanese, and he goes over to the machine, and he buys two glasses of sake, and he sits down with me, and he's talking with me, and... he had tears in his eyes. And he was sitting there telling me how sorry he was for the war. And I'm like a young man who wasn't even alive during the war. And I'm sitting there listening to this man, and I can feel his heart, and I can feel the pain of what he was going through because of the experiences that he had. This was another human being that was sitting down. I didn't know this man. He didn't know me. We didn't know each other by name. We never even introduced ourselves. We were just there talking as human to human. And I sat there and drank some sake with him, and I had tears in my eyes too. And I'm like, I'm really sorry for the war. I wasn't alive when it was going on, but I'm sorry that this has affected your life the way it has, and this even had to happen to begin with. And I made a friend that day. I still don't know his name. But we left up out there with a hug. Seriously. I come all the way I came all the way from the United States of America. Wasn't even in the generation when World War II was actually occurring. My grandfather fought in World War II, and I heard stories from him. But me, personally, I was never even there. I couldn't call myself a veteran of World War II because I wasn't there. I wasn't even alive. But I sat down and I had the honor of talking to a Japanese soldier that was there when it happened. And I came away from there with a sadness, and I just can't explain it to you. It's not something, unless you literally sit down with one of these individuals, if there's any alive still today, and you sit down and you talk to them about it. And there's a lot of stories out there about German soldiers sitting down with American soldiers on Christmas Day and stuff. Whether they're fact or fiction, I don't care. I know the true heart of humanity. I know the capability of what we could do if we literally put our minds to it. This all talk about war and justifications or lack thereof or whatever, it doesn't affect the militaries alone. It doesn't affect the governments alone. It affects the average Joe. The man who would have been a farmer is now a soldier. Now he's in the position to where, for his country and his patriotism, he has to take another life of somebody else that's perceived to be an enemy. You know, I dream about a world of peace. And I know it's a big dream. It's a dream that maybe never will come to pass. And we may actually end up seeing World War III. If I didn't think this was a potential to happen, I wouldn't waste my time sitting out here trying to shout it from the mountain and try to tell all the people of the world, this is not something you want. I studied science since I was a kid, and I understand the devastation that would come about. And I've studied people since I was a kid. And I understand the devastation in just in the mental state, just in the physical state of what could actually come about. I wish that somehow or another I could stand before all the representation of this world and have a conversation with them like I'm doing with the real representation of the world, the people that are sitting on this panel right here. These are the people that are your neighbors and your friends and your saviors. These are the people that's going to come to your rescue when you need somebody to help you out. The government ain't going to come to your rescue, and if they do show up, it's for a photo op. Look what happened in Katrina. It was the people that came together to feed each other. It was the people that come together to pull each other out of the rubble. Now, I'm not anti-government. I'm anti-corruption. I'm anti-stupidity. I'm anti-lack of common sense.
You know, war is hell. There is only one way to win it, and that's beat your enemy to a bloody pulp until he submits. Now, the solution to the problem is abolish war. And the way you do that is to get rid of the, the greedy politicians.
Well, we need people.
You abolish war and you get rid of the war-mongering, greedy politicians.
We need people like are sitting on this panel. You know, if you go out and look at all the congressmen, all the senators, all the presidents of the United States are either big businessmen or they're wealthy or they have access to people who have money. It's you got to pretty much buy your way in office with all kinds of ad campaigns and such and donations and all that. We're donating money to all these candidates to get our perceived leaders to come up there to represent us. When is it going to come a time when the average Joe hears somebody like Barry Prince or Barbara Threecrow or Raymond Head or Tom talk about the things that we talk about and say, look, I want them as my congressman. I want them as my senator, or I want them as my president. And you put your funds behind them. You continuously put your funds behind the mainstream. The same people you profess to be aggravated at because they don't do what they say they're going to do when they get there. But you're not putting your neighbor in a position of power that is like mine that says that he's going to do the right thing no matter what. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Well, war can be solved by trade.
Bring the farm workers.
I'm still on this here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm still on this. Okay, I popped in a couple of other sites here because I'm sorry, I still disagree about this supposed end of the war because it did not end the war, and it also didn't take out any military or soldiers because half the majority of the soldiers were out of those cities. It was innocent men, women, children, old people that were annihilated in those dropping of the bombs, and the destruction was horrific for the Japanese society, but it didn't. The use of this barbarous weapon was of no material assistance in our war against Japan. This is Admiral William Leahy, Truman's chief of staff. Now, if you really want to know the truth, go to these sites, go to these links, because this, I'm sorry, this is about when are we going to stop thinking that we can just drop bombs on innocent people because they looked at us crooked or they did this or they didn't do that. We have to stop this. There's no reason. I cannot agree.
Well,
that
George,
it's okay
George
to annihilate
Bush,
thousands and thousands of people.
George
I'm
Bush
just,
did.
I can't.
George Bush did the shock and awe. And the shock and awe wasn't to convince the leaders directly. The shock and awe was to convince the leaders through the people. And that's exactly what happened over there. Stephen Gibbons in the chat room said Japan did not want to have a war with the U.S. They knew they could never win, but America was enforcing an embargo on the Pacific,
right,
stopping Japan getting oil and supplies. They had no choice. Pearl Harbor was a false flag. America parked up.
Of course it was.
It's old
That's
fleet.
Right.
Hold on.
Let me finish reading Stephen's
comment here.
I want to hear
what everybody said. Let me finish. He said, was a false flag America parked up its old fleet they wanted rid of anyway, knowing that the Japanese would have no choice but to attack it to break the free of the embargo. Now, see, when I was raised up and I'm going through through social studies and world events and I'm learning all this history, I'm learning from the history from what people told me that was in that history book. I don't know the true history because I wasn't there in the mix of it, so I can't verify everything. All I can tell you is from what I was taught during my time, I based my opinions on what was going on. Well, the truth of the matter is, and we've seen this many times in our life, the person that wins the war gets to write the history. And it may not be the exact way that history played out, but it all boils down to the same exact thing. It is not the governments of the world who have the feelings of what the retribution that actually feel the pain of what went on. It's the average Joe. It's the sailor that was on that ship or on the shore or wherever. It's your brothers, it's your sisters, it's your children. Those are the folks that's going to feel this stuff. We could debate forever and a day who was right and who was wrong in that entire situation, but I'm going to tell you, what I saw at that museum back in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, let alone civilian casualties like we saw. There were people that were standing right at ground zero that were instantly incinerated. There were people standing a little further out that were basically burnt and stuck to the wall. There were people a little further out whose flesh was literally stripped from their body to where all you could see is muscle and bone.
It's okay because it wasn't in our backyard and they were people of color. And they gave us the right, basically. They were the enemy, and somebody else is going to be the enemy next and has been. But Truman's chief of staff said, and I'm just going to quote this, the Japanese were already defeated and ready to surrender in being the first to use it. This bomb, we adopted an ethical standard common to the barbarians of the Dark Ages. I was not taught to make war in that fashion. Wars cannot be won by destroying women and children. There you go.
Well,
I'm sorry, but that's where we're heading back again.
And the next occurrence could literally be in the backyards of our women and children.
That's right.
That's the point I'm trying to get to with this show right here. That is what
Barry has something to say.
Okay, I'm sorry, Barry. You know how we get passionate around here. I didn't mean to cut you off, brother.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to get a couple comments in there. I mean, I'm sitting here and feeling like I'm out of the conversation right now. But no, listen, really, I agree with Barbara 100% because the last atomic bomb was dropped on August the 6th. Japan didn't surrender till September the 2nd. And during that period of time, they unleashed this firestorm on Tokyo, which was absolutely just devastating. And people don't even look at that. Really, Pearl Harbor, guys, I mean, if you really study Pearl Harbor, the Americans mysteriously moved all three of their aircraft carriers 3 days before the attack to a so-called sortie arrangement 450 miles north of Pearl Harbor. So they are out of effective range, but they protected the carriers because they knew this strike was coming. It was just another example of sacrificing American lives to perpetrate an agenda. We saw the same thing happen on 9/11. We saw the same thing happen in Japan or in Vietnam. I mean, every false flag that they've done, we've called out now. We understand how they use it, how they perpetrate it, and they get the same reaction from the American people every time. Really, banks used to control all the wars. We know that. Every war is funded on both sides by the banksters, and all we are is pawns playing the game for them. Period. And yeah, what they did in Nagasaki and Hiroshima should never have happened, but it did.
Even the President Eisenhower said when his Secretary of War, Henry Stimson, of the decision told him to use the atomic weapons, Eisenhower voiced to him his grave misgivings. First, on the basis of his belief that Japan was already defeated and that dropping the bomb was completely unnecessary, and secondly, because I thought that our country should avoid shocking world opinion by the use of a weapon whose employment was, he thought, no longer mandatory as a measure to save American lives. Now, that's right. A big fallacy. All these lives were saved. They were not. I'm sorry. So this to me, we are the people. We have to not go to war. We have to say, I'm not going to war. In the tradition of the native people, the clan mothers determined to go to war or not. Because they were givers of life, they're not going to send their children, their sons, or their daughters to war. They made common sense decisions and determinations whether it was actually a good thing for the whole, for the greater whole, to go to war or not. And that was determined by the grandmothers. Today, we just have, you know, these warmongers, you know, colonels and generals and all this stuff, and the corporate mind that wants war. They want war. They'll make an excuse no matter what it is. We have to be alert and not let this happen. There is no good thing about war. World War II was termed the good war.
Yeah, it was also said that World War II would be the war to end all wars. It didn't. It made things worse.
Well, that's not in their plan. Their plan is continue, as we have seen. We're right. Still at war on many levels.
We haven't stopped going to war since the Second World War, and we will never stop going to war as long as these people are in charge, because they control both sides of all war. People have to realize that. If you study Second World War history, you'll find out how the Germans were founded, how Hitler was put into power, what his role was supposed to be. It was all a charade, and we're seeing the same thing unfold. Time after time after time again, they create the enemy, they go fight the enemy. They create the enemy, they go fight the enemy.
Well, let me lay a scenario down for you guys and gals. Let me lay a scenario down for you. Let's just, you know, like play a hypothetical. And I know Thomas don't like hypotheticals, but I just want to put a hypothetical out there anyway. Let's say that there were prior societies to ours, and they ended up in the same deal. Three Crow in the chat room over there mentioned earlier, melted earth due to a nuclear vent found in the Middle East desert, a type of glass formed only from nuclear vent. Let's say hypothetically that there were some civilizations prior to ours that were advanced as ours. They finally got to this part, and they, instead of taking the path that we're trying to guide everybody on, they chose the nuclear option, and they destroyed themselves, and the things that were left over, you know, the Egyptians moved into or whatever. Nonetheless, visualize that whole concept. They started off from pretty much the Stone Age and worked their way up to high technology. The technology got so advanced they destroyed themselves for greed or whatever. And then here we are here standing in the next time around. Was it you, Barbara, said something about the sixth extinction?
Yes.
Okay, so here we are now again. The sixth time around. Are we going to take the same path that they took prior to us? Are we going to take the path where we, the people, who are the military? Because they call us when they want us to go fight somebody else's military. All right?
I have to say, it's the kings and queens and the serfs still remain in place.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. That piece I put in there about the glass or the melted sand that appears there in the desert, they believe it was the only thing that could have done that was a nuclear event. And this was supposedly about Atlantis, a high level of civilization, as we know with Atlantis. And yes, history repeats itself. And here we are in another circumstance. Are we going to allow this same thing to happen? Because you have people who get taken by evil. People who get manipulated by, and I'm going to say it, Luciferian, you know.
Well, I kind of lost you there for a second. What happened? You see, Raymond's always saying that, you know, if you ignore history, you're bound to repeat it.
You're doomed to repeat it.
Yeah. So, I understand where all of y'all coming from, and I understand the urgency of the message, and I think that's the reason why we showed up when we did in this timeline. I don't think that not one of you aren't important to what needs to be done in this world. I think we lost Barbara. Hope she didn't lose her internet connection. But I think that every single person who showed up here is here for a reason. I don't never believe anything just happens, you know, by accident. I believe that everybody, you know, like what I said about Paul Harvey back in 1965. When I listen to the words that man said in 1965, I'm thinking, I'm listening to a prophet back in that day that was trying to warn humanity of an incoming destruction. I think that that could potentially be us. Am I saying I'm a prophet? No, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that the words of wisdom aren't spoken to the masses out there. The only direction that you're going in is what you're being guided in by those that we choose to be our representatives or allow via our money system to manipulate humanity. Because every time there's a war, they make money. When's the last time a soldier come up out of a war and was rich? He wasn't. He come up out of the war, he's either missing legs or arms or you know, stress syndrome or whatever. The average Joe bears the burden of every single conflict in the history of time, and the leaders that sent us to war, it's like that old Black Sabbath song where they talk about the war machine. Basically, the generals gathered in their masses like witches at black masses, and they send all the peasants and all the people to fight their enemies. We are being used as pawns. I'm trying to tell everybody out there right now, we're standing at an amazing crossroads to where we the people actually have within our hands the power to resolve this before it ever even occurs again. We got the power right there at our fingertips. My friend Steve, he talks about how we're sitting here right now. We have the vast sum of all man's knowledge at our fingertips. On my Mad Science show, me and Raymond and Thomas, we talk about all the solutions possible to resolve the so-called energy crisis or the global climate change due to emissions or whatever. We got the solutions for it. You guys got the solutions. You got things that your elders have told you. You've got history to look back on. You've got all kinds of information that you have access to. And we the people, if we could gather these people on our masses, we the people and these networks and all the different radio shows that we do, and we can inform each other, and we can find the true history, we can find the truth of all this stuff, and share it with one another, and formulate a plan to literally build a society right alongside the old society without going to war with our own people. We can just build it, lead by example, and at some point in time, the governments of this world become purely irrelevant. No longer they're necessary. Hey, you remember that thing they used to call government? Yeah, that was a mess. You understand what I'm trying to say? Small communities do it all the time. They barter with each other. They trade. They share information. They help each other out. They take care of each other. They heal their sick. It's been done generation after generation, but it's never been done by representation. It's always been done by Barbara's heritage and Barry's heritage and Raymond's heritage and my heritage and Thomas's heritage. It's we the people that built this world. We the people that put the burdens of all the pain and suffering on our backs to elevate them so that they could be the so-called Illuminati, the top of the pyramid. We elevate our entertainment, our artists, our movie stars. We elevate them up on a higher level and we aspire to be like them. When are we going to start to aspire to be like Barry or Barbara or Raymond or Thomas? That's the point I'm trying to get to. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of your actions. You have the power of love. You got so much power in your body, you as an individual. Every single listener out there, there is not one cog in the machine that is not important. You take one piece of that machine out and that machine will not function properly. That's why I'm against death. That's why I'm against collateral damage. Because if you take the cog out of the machine that is humanity, and humanity can no longer function like it was meant to, we are our brother's keepers. We're the caretakers of the land and the animals and all this gift that we've been given. We got beauty unlike anything you could ever wish for right before our very eyes. We got a self-contained biosphere. Mother Nature has provided everything that we need to take care of each other and left it all up to us to whether we were going to decide. We got that free will thing going on. We can decide to fight with each other. We can decide to hate each other because somebody looks different than us or acts a different way. Or we can understand that all the past mistakes that we've made, we've killed people because of their color, we've killed people because of their beliefs, we've killed people because of their governments, we killed people for all kinds of reasons. And when I say we, I'm not talking about we as in everybody listening to this show, I'm talking we as a whole. The entirety of humanity. By allowing governments to run amok, we are complicit. You know, it's not in my backyard. Somebody said that on this show earlier. It's not in my backyard. Until it bothers me, it's not my problem. The younger generation just said it to me 2 days ago. The younger generation said, I don't care. What'd you have to say, Barry? I'm sorry.
I said it will be soon in our backyard.
Yeah.
And if we don't identify it, really, you know, if we think about society as a whole, folks, I mean, we have been conditioned right from day one to accept the ruling class. Generation after generation after generation has been conditioned in their minds to accept the ruling class. And until we can break society's stigma of the ruling class being necessary to make our lives functional, and how we can replace that in society, we're going to continue to go down the road we are. We have to start things on a grassroots level and show people that what you said, Shaziz, is so true. I've said this many times that, you know, you think you're powerless to do something, but really, you have incredible power simply by not supporting the thing that is killing us. And I try and do that in every aspect of my life. If everybody did what they could to take a little piece out of that wheel every day of their lives, you would see the wheel start to come apart. And that's where I think we have to go.
Well, I know this. I know the hearts of the four people that sat before me here, the Honorable Knights. Honorable Knight Raymond, I know he's got a heart size of Texas, and I know for a fact that he does what he can for everybody and his brother. He always helps people. And I've seen Thomas, and even though me and Thomas, we kind of give each other a lot of guff, he's like my brother. And he's got a heart of gold. And I know Barbara's heart. I know Barbara's heart. I've listened to her shows. I've talked to her in person, not in person, but I've talked to her on many Skype conversations. And she's got a love for her heritage. She's got a love for her humanity. She's got wisdom. Did you say you were 73 years old, Barbara?
No,
I'm 74.
74.
74.
That is a whole lot of acquired wisdom and life that people should not push aside. Listen to what this lady has to say. I mean, honestly, folks. And Barry, I know your passion because I've talked to you so many times in so many Skype conversations and in so many radio shows. I know that you have a love for humanity unlike so many others out there who just simply don't care. And the reason why we do what we is we do, you go on there and you look at the Knights podcast page and you look at the Knights coat of arms, the reason why we do what we do. You know, I've had people tell me, you know, all you guys do is talk. That's all we talk. We don't ever get nothing resolved. But I'm going to tell you something. The power of the spoken word is more powerful than you can possibly imagine. And we immortalized our words in the digital cyberspace for eternity. People down the line are going to hear what we said. They're going to hear about the dream. You know, we are the founding fathers, the mothers, the sisters, the brothers, the aunts, the uncles, the cousins, and so on, of our children, our children's children's future. And what we do today will definitely define the world that they live in tomorrow. So with that said, these words are important. These conversations are powerful. And we can't never lose sight of that. And we can't never shut up. Look, Barbara probably got some really nice things that she could be out there doing right now. Instead of trying to tell the world, look, we got it going down a bad path. She could be out there enjoying life and just tiptoeing through the tulips and not even worrying about it. It's not in her backyard yet. You know, not to the extent that it is over in a war zone. And Barry sacrifices all his time to try to inform his neighbors and stuff. Raymond keeps a lot of people employed who otherwise wouldn't be employed. He loves and he helps, and Thomas has got all kinds of things going on. He cares about people in his side, and he's always taking care of them, trying to put themselves before everybody else is what this panel has been doing. I've been on this radio show for, God, at least 6 years at the very least. And I keep on repeating the same thing.
You know, Shaziz, you're reminding me of, there are no tulips here yet because we've got 2 feet of snow. But, you know, over the years, and I know you've been on radio longer than me, and I know, you know, Patty too, and Barry probably, you know, I sometimes, I guess when I was into this, like maybe for about 2 years, I started to get this feeling like, you know, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir, and sometimes I feel like I'm a preacher, you know, preaching to the choir and feeling like I don't see much shift and much change, and you sort of like start to get down that particular rabbit hole about why should I bother, you know, nobody's really changing, nobody's really paying attention, I keep like I'm repeating myself over and over and over again, and I'm not just sitting here making things up. You know, the way I live my life, I live through guidance. I express and share things through guidance that I receive. So I'm not over here trying to think of things to say or making stuff up, you know, willy-nilly. I'm sharing things that I receive from guidance, from source, you know, from my creator and from my own personal experiences and so on. But sometimes you feel like, why should I even bother, you know? And then this voice would come through and say, look, don't have your own agenda that you must be speaking to minions of people and everybody suddenly shifting and everybody going, aha, you know. No, if you reach one other person, you have done incredible work while you are here on this Mother Earth. So I had to kind of like hone down and, you know, kind of pull back of my expectations about how people were going to receive or shift or change or awake, you know. Because I realize everyone is on their own sacred path. Some will awaken now. Some may not awaken at all. Some later. But we are seed planters. We are planting the seeds, okay? And when you plant a seed in your garden, you put it down on inside the earth, and your heart is good. You have all hopes, and your vision is for what this is going to become. You give it water. You go, every once in a while, you go back and you check on it, and you know the sun is on it, the water, you water it, you nurture it. You have high hopes and a good vision for that seed. But you don't stand over that seed screaming and yelling, and come on, grow, and you're going to be a perfect plant, and you're going to do it now. You know, so as a seed planter, we speak from our heart, we research the truth, we do our job as best we can in prayer. And with a, you know, in a, with a good energy. So that's, I just want to share that.
Yeah, and we may not live to reap the benefits of the seeds that we plant. My heart's like connected, like a log chain's connected to my heart to this cause. For some reason, every time I try to walk away, if it wasn't for people like Barbara and Barry and Raymond's talked me out of leaving many times. I get so frustrated because I'm impatient, because I see the possibilities of what we could do in this world, and in me being impatient as I am, it's not happening fast enough because I feel the urgency so badly. And Barry will come on here and he will talk to me about the urgency of what's going on in Fukushima. And I start coming up with all kinds of ideas and solutions, and I start spewing them out there to the world, hoping that they'll take them and run with them. And, you know, it's a hard road to travel when you decide to become one of the Knights of the Round Table. It really is.
And well, when you become the messenger, I always say don't shoot the messenger, don't kill the messenger. It's not an easy pathway, and you have to have a lot of patience. But the main thing you really have to have is your faith, knowing that Creator is at work. We may not see things unfolding in our time, but we are participating. I'd rather be participating in this, in the way I am, rather than just, you know, shutting down and saying, that's it, why bother, I don't care, because that's not who I am. So Creator is at work. Our participation is key. It's really crucial. And, you know, so we have to kind of remember that. It's our faith in the Creator, you know.
I agree.
What you said before brought something to my mind. I've always said that in any battle, the only two ways you can possibly lose is to die or quit fighting, kicking, punching, and screaming. You quit, you lose.
Yep, and we are up against an opponent that is so evil that basically wants to torment the heck out of humanity. You know, it's look. I know there's folks out there who listen to Shaziz Radio and the Knights of the Round Table that aren't believers in God or creation or anything like that. And then I can understand your view. All right, but nonetheless. All of us, we live in the same boat together. And we all have pretty much the same ideas of what's the difference between rights and wrongs, and we don't want anybody to suffer. There's a lot of good-hearted people that don't believe in God, and I'm sorry. You know, I hope that someday you come around to my point of view. I mean, I don't know that my point of view is right, but I try to use what I've learned throughout my entire life to try to benefit others because I believe that's the right thing to do. And I don't want anybody to ever underestimate themselves. I don't want anybody to overestimate themselves. And I don't want anybody to underestimate the power that you have within you. The power of love, man. Think about it just for a second. Follow. If you could only follow a smile from your face to somebody else's and see how far that smile traveled, you'd realize Amen. Then.
Amen. Jesus tells me that I love everybody as if they're my brother. And really, you know, earlier in my life, I was an ugly person, but I have to say it through my connection with Jesus and the way I see the human race and the way I feel about my human beings and my fellow human beings. I try and show love everywhere I go, guys, and really, if you open your hearts and show that true love to people, it has an amazing effect on the way they see things. It really
will
does.
Most people... Yeah, will you include your sisters? Because you see, I look at language, and language is powerful. And when we are trained to say, you know, man,
brothers and sisters.
Yeah, I mean, this is
you're
very
right,
key, right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Good point made. I agree with you. I look at everybody the same way. I feel the pain in people. I see what's going on in this planet, and there isn't a day go by that I don't shed tears for what I see going on. But you know what? This isn't in my power. This is above my head. What's going on this planet, I honestly believe, will manifest the way my Bible tells me it's going to manifest itself. And the most important thing in my life right now is to be at peace in myself, that I start my day in prayer. I ask for strength and wisdom, and it works, and I ask Him for love. And I want to act like Jesus. I mean, I'll never come close to what He was, but the love that He had for people, you share that with people and they know it's real and it's coming from a good place, it has an amazing effect on people. Focus, it really does. That's all I got to say.
Well, you know, I'm gonna respond to, can I just respond to that? Because I'm a very spiritual person, you know. I'm not a religious person. I'm a very spiritual person, and I have my connectedness to Great Spirit, Creator, you know, in my way, in the tradition that I follow, that I live by. That's my life. And the same way that you are speaking about Yeshua, which is His real name, Yeshua, that love and that compassion and tenderness, you see, is what we need to be. That is the key. It comes from the source. It doesn't matter whether you read the Bible or not. It doesn't matter whether you're in that religion or this religion. Everyone has the capacity to understand that all the great holy teachers, all the great people who came, the teachers, the holy ones, said the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we're hearing the same message. It's about love. It's about compassion. And it's about tenderness, you know. It doesn't matter what religion you are, you know, or what you follow or not, or even if you don't believe in a God. We're human beings, and we all have this capacity to love and to be tender and compassionate.
I'm an outcast in my own faith. That sounds crazy, don't it? I'm literally an outcast in my own faith, because what I read in my book is I take literally, and there was a portion in there where Jesus talked about or Yeshua. Now I'm not even sure about what I even have that. I even have those prayers where I ask Jesus to tell me his real name so that I can get it right, because I don't want to get it wrong. Anyway, nonetheless, there's a portion in there where he talks about, lest these days be numbered, that these things will come to pass. And he was talking about the prophecies that are talked about in Revelations. And what that told me was something different than I guess that it told everyone else, is that because we were given free will, we have a choice. That we could literally change that outcome if we could actually get our act together. You know, as a father, when I leave my house and I tell my children, I say, you know, I'm going to go to work now and I want you guys to do your chores and your homework, and when I come home I want to find this house in order, and then you know, I come back and everybody's hanging from the chandeliers and busting out windows and half the house is on fire and in just total chaos, I'm going to be aggravated and the wrath of me is going to come down on my children because I'm mad. Now imagine if you're God and you come back to this world, God creator or however you think we got here, nonetheless, you come back and you, your people, your creation, have totally disregarded everything you had to say, every bit of words of wisdom and your rules and all that, and it's in total chaos. You're going to be angry. But imagine just for a second if it were possible that we could all come to a higher understanding, a level of enlightenment, to where we could start taking care of each other like we should have been all along, where we could take care of the land and the nature and the animals and cleaning up after ourselves and such. And when our Creator showed back up here, we had everything so in order that He smiled upon us. How can you destroy something that you come back and it has pleased you? Do you understand what I'm trying to say here?
I do. You know, we all got the original instructions. We all got the message, the original instructions when we came here. We were all gifted with that. And yes, we were gifted free will. And that tells me something, that we all have that free will to choose. And we got sidetracked. A great majority of the children, Creator, Mother, Father's children, got sidetracked and went down that wrong road. Chose maybe that left road or right road, it doesn't matter. Wrong road, but I don't believe there are any wrong or right. I believe that there's opportunity. Opportunity to learn, opportunity to gain something, to become a better person, to learn from our mistakes. As a mother and a grandmother, I know that, you know, I love my children and I know they're going to go out on their journey. I gave them life. And I know at some point they're going to go out that door and they're going to go on their journey. I can't go there with them. I have to just let go of my sons and my daughters and my grandchildren and have, you know, that prayer in my heart for them to find their way, to find finally the way, if I want to call it the pathway that will bring them into a better way of being as a human, a kind, loving, caring person, compassionate person. That's all I could pray for, you know, but they're going to take a pathway that might be frightening to me. I know that's inevitable. And Creator, children here, we've all taken some, you know, bad turns in our life, but I know the love of Creator, Mother, Father is enormous, but still in all, we are at a point, this crucial point in time. I don't think, it's sort of, I talked about the grace period is over. We've had this grace period, from what I'm understanding, because when the life was taken of this holy man named Yeshua, came down and he was his life was taken, and this is meant to be, I guess, he sacrificed his life for our sins. But there's a grace period now. We're reaching the end of that grace period, and this is why this is a crucial time. We have to make a choice now and wake up. We can no longer take privilege with, you know, these wrong choices because the grace period is done. There's no more grace period. We are going to be held responsible now, big time. You know, it's sort of like when your child continually makes a mistake and they're bad, they're wrong, they're harmful. There's something called tough love, you know? Right? And you have to say, okay, I can no longer enable you. I've given you all that I possibly can. I've given you paradise. I've given you the tools. I've given you everything. I've given you my love. And I see that you are still unable to shift, you know, and change your behavior, which is damaging. I call it three strikes, you're out kind of thing, but it is about tough love. And the parent at some point has to make that decision because they are just enabling their child.
Yeah, I agree.
Barry said a word in some sentence that he said, and it got me to thinking. And he said, I hope I'm not changing the subject here, but I want to say something to the listeners. He said the word smile. I don't know what else he said, but it got me thinking. A lot of people say a smile is contagious. They also say a smile doesn't cost anything, but it does. It costs energy to move the muscles in your face to create a smile. However, a frown takes 240 muscles more to frown than it does to smile. Now, there's a little thing I'd like for all the listeners out there to try when the show's over. I want you to sit and look at a clock with the second hand on it and just hold a perfect poker face for 1 minute, and then you literally smile. Okay, now, when you smile, I want you to concentrate on your whole body. And when you smile, you will feel a wave, a very, very pleasant wave of energy surge through your whole body. Now, if you go out, as you walk into the bank or the grocery store, somebody's walking up, and you don't even know, just smile. But concentrate on your body. When they smile back, because it is contagious, when they smile back, that energy rush you get is twice as strong.
That's why I keep saying you can't understand how much power you really have.
I'm sitting here smiling because I love what you're saying, and it is so true.
It's so true, Barbara.
I got the biggest smile on my face, and I do that. If I go into the store, I'm right there. I see somebody with that frown, and their shoulders are stooped, and I kind of like look at them, and I put a big smile on my face, and they kind of go, huh, like they get a little shocked.
Why are you smiling? What's wrong with you? Are you on drugs? Are you
out
of
money?
Right.
Don't you feel a wave, a very pleasant energy wave going through your body as you smile?
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's energy to smile.
The smile is not free, but it is pleasant.
You've earned that.
You spent the energy, but you've got something pleasant back.
You know what it does, Freeman? You know what it does? It allows me to start.
It's twice as strong.
I have started conversations with complete strangers, people I've never talked to before in my life, and sat down and had a 15-minute conversation right off the cuff, simply because I smiled and said, how you doing? How's your day going? And I say that to everybody I meet, and it opens up their hearts, and they respond to you. And all of a sudden, you're having a conversation. I find this one of the most rewarding things I can do, just simply sharing that bit of love with a total stranger. And it just touches their hearts, guys.
With all that said, folks.
We need to change things. We need to do this. We need to do that. And so let's start there. Let's adamantly please beg our listeners to smile. Just smile. I mean, we've got to start somewhere. The longest journey starts with a single step.
You could take it a step further.
You don't have to necessarily... Yeah, it's good what you're saying, but if you don't get out to see people or whatever, or any moment in your day, you can look outside at the Mother Earth and you can say thank you.
Yeah.
And you could speak to Creator, your Creator, and you could say thank you.
Hey, Barbara, let me tell you something crazy. I want to give you a visual of OSHA's is. I'm walking around out there on my property, I own 12 acres out here in the country. And I'm talking to my fruit trees, and I'm telling them I love them and all this kind of stuff. And I'm talking to the rabbits, and I'm talking to the deer and the birds. How you doing there, Mr. Bird? I hope you're having a good day. And so anybody looking from the outside, looking in, following me around in my daily life would think I'm a nutcase. But I'm out there, and I'm loving my land, and I'm standing on it. I'm telling them, I hope you're having a good day and all that kind of stuff. I actually saw a couple ducks in one of the ponds that's on my property, and I turned around and I walked the other direction because I didn't want to disturb them because it looked like they were having a good outing. There was three ducks in the pond. And so and my friend Dom came up, and I told him, I said, well, let's go this way because there's three ducks in the pond, and it looked like they're having a good time. I don't want to interrupt them. So that's, I know it sounds kind of crazy, But that's the mentality here on my property. I feel blessed to be able to borrow this land from Earth and God or wherever it came from. I feel blessed to have...
That's what Shiz is saying, because he does do that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not crazy.
It's not shooting you a lot of bull, folks.
It's not crazy, because I do the same thing. I'm in gratitude every day. I look outside, I walk outside, we've got 103 acres here. And I go out, I look out from my window. Every day I go out and put down my sacred tobacco, and I give gratitude and thanks for everything here, for my life, for the beauty all around me, for the water, the life, the winged ones, the standing ones, the green nations. So I give thanks for everything, you know. And if you just stop a moment and look out, if you go outside, you just hold yourself a little bit and just look at nature around you. Just don't pass it by or sweep your eyes over it quickly and just go on about your business. Go outside and stand there for a moment. Take some breaths and listen and hold your eyesight at something, a tree, a forest, whatever it is.
Take your shoes off and do it.
If you just hold that, you will receive something.
Take your shoes off and do it. Stand in the grass.
Well,
stand in the grass and bare feet.
Well, we got 2 feet of snow here, but I'm telling you.
Well, I
could try that too. I don't know.
Don't do that, Barbara.
People wonder, Barbara, why I forage mushrooms for a living now. I walked away from a $150,000 a year job to go make $25,000 or $30,000 a year foraging mushrooms. It's not about the mushrooms. It's the fact that I get to spend 4 or 5 months every year in the bush. And I'll tell you what that does for your soul, I cannot even begin to describe.
Well, the way we accept things, the medicines from the mother, of course, is an offering. We never take anything from the mother without giving her an offering back, or leaving the main mother plant or the elder plant, you know.
Absolutely.
We always take and ask first, and we always give. We just don't scarf things up, because this is a gift and it's medicines. And the mother has given us all the medicines that we would ever need. We didn't have to create anything. We didn't have to scientifically make anything. Everything we needed here was clean water, clean air, the fruits and vegetables of the earth, the medicines. Everything was given to us by Creator here. And we've kind of like messed around and manipulated with nature and changing things and making things better. How can you make things better when this was...
How can you improve on perfection?
Yeah, well, folks...
And you know what? Hey, one quick thought. You know, when I do... This is something that I learned, when I started foraging, that I can forage in such a way that I don't destroy the earth in any shape or form. When I'm picking my pines, when I'm picking my chanterelles, we do it in such a way that those mushrooms will grow again next year in the same spot.
Well, folks, I'm enjoying this conversation so much, it breaks my heart to try to stop it, because this has been a brilliant show. I mean, I just love everything that's been said on this show. You know, I love the discussion, and even the times where we disagreed, how we did it respectfully. I want to read a couple words out, and then I want to say something, a quote from my spiritual beliefs. My friend Simply Steve is pretty brilliant, and some of the things that comes out of his mouth is just so profound. If you go look at ShazizRadio.com and you look at the banner that's at the top of it, it's a real beautiful photo of grass and some stones and maybe some trees in the background. And he said, "Nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change." Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
In my book of faith, Jesus said that if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could move mountains. You could say, tell that mountain to move, and that mountain would move. A lot of folks don't believe that's even possible. But the mountain that we're talking about moving right now seems to be so impenetrable, but seems to be so incredibly overwhelming that we don't think that we can move it. But Raymond started off a conversation about a smile, and Barbara took it up even further than that. But if you take that smile and you understand the true power in your body by one facial expression, that you can make somebody's day better just by smiling upon them, think about what you could do by the actions. If you give this person a hug and they go around and give somebody else a hug, you know, that's just one little tiny fraction of what we are capable of doing. And your words are powerful. words do have meaning. You got to be careful about the way that you put words out there. Sometimes I have to sit there and I got to contemplate on what I'm going to say before I say it so that it's not misconstrued to sound like something that it ain't supposed to. And that's why I'm careful with my words. When you hear the words coming from me, they're coming truly from the heart. When you talk to people and immediately they start to cherry pick your words and they turn and they twist it, it gets so frustrating because that's not what you're trying to say. You're trying to bring yourself to a point where they can understand where you're coming from. Not everybody out there believes the way that I believe. Not everybody has the same ideas that I have. But I'm doing the best I can with what I got to work with. And all these people that I'm fortunate enough, I feel honored, truly honored, that these folks would even spend any time with me whatsoever. I'm humbled by it. Because these are great people. They're people of wisdom, people of true heart. And these shows that we put together, maybe some folks think we're just preaching to the choir. Maybe some folks think it's just words. But like I said, these are immortalized. You can find the podcast of the Knights of the Round Table and the Mad Science Show. There's like 400 and some odd podcasts to go through. Years and years of people just like what you've heard right now. And if you like these podcasts, share them with somebody. Share them like you would a smile. There's some words of wisdom in there. And if that sends the ripples across the land, it's going to put a positive influence on the world that we have to deal with today. And then someday down the line, because we laid those stones and planted them seeds, that our future generations can live in a world better than the one that we had to contend with without all the chaos, the pain and the suffering. That's our hope, and that's the dream. Folks, you've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We will be back again. Maybe other people with us. But I want you to think about what you've heard here today. I want you to do like Raymond said. Go out and smile at somebody. See how many people you could smile at in one day. Try the tests that he talked about. Do the things that Barry talked about. So, this is the time in the show where we go around and give up all the Knights their last comment. And it's really important because there might be something that they've been thinking about throughout the entire show that they wanted to say, but they just didn't have the time to say it because we all get passionate. You can see. Sometimes we love, sometimes we laugh, sometimes we cry, sometimes we're angry. We're humans just like everybody else out there listening to these shows. So, which one of y'all want to go first?
Me.
Go ahead, Raymond.
When the show is over, please, folks, we're begging you. Please, when the show is over, for 1 minute, put a poker face on your face and watch for 1 minute. Then deliberately smile and pay attention to your body and feel that energy wave pass through your body and how pleasant it feels. Then, when you go out and you see someone you don't even know, just smile at them. Trust me, 99 times out of 100, they will smile back. And when they do, pay attention to your energy wave. It will be double or even triple. And it would be very, very pleasant. What we want to do is try to get everybody in the world smiling. And we need your help. And you can do it.
Well, good thoughts, Raymond.
We lost Barbara.
Yeah, well, she said thanks for inviting us in and enjoyed the conversation. Great show. Really, folks, the weapon of fear is the number one arsenal, the number one tool in their arsenal. And if you're right in your soul, if your soul is in the right place and your heart is in the right place, that weapon will have no effect on you at all. And that's all I can say is that your heart's in the right place, you walk in no fear.
Eat smile.
And the truth will come out. And I'm only here trying to express my feelings and my thoughts of what I see unfolding on this planet. Whether you like it or not, we're going to keep talking. We're going to talk until they don't allow us to talk anymore. So,
I agree,
great
brother.
Day, guys. Great show, guys.
I'm right there with you. When they haul you off, they're going to haul me off. Maybe we'll meet in the middle somewhere.
Yeah, maybe they'll put... I'll request to be put into the same FEMA camp as you, okay?
Yeah, cool.
And Raymond and Tom will ask them for a joint cell there, and we can all have a chat before they do whatever it is they're going to do.
Well, I see Thomas in there, but I hadn't heard him. Thomas, you around? No? Well, I'm sure Thomas would have had some words of wisdom and some brilliance. Folks, you got to hear from Honorable Knight Barber Three Crow. Brilliant words. You got to hear from Honorable Knight Raymond Head. And you've heard from Thomas, Honorable Knight Thomas, and you've heard from Honorable Knight Barry today, and I hope that you take their words to heart, and I hope that you realize that you're not helpless. As bad as the world may seem, and as bad as it all, they all keep telling you that it is, I believe that together we can fix things. Otherwise, I wouldn't be taking the time to do what it is that I do. I love myself, I love my family, I love the world. I got a heart the size of Texas that Raymond lives in. He's got a heart the size of Texas. There's two big old hearts. Barry's got a heart the size of Texas. Texas, everything's bigger in Texas. Why is that, Raymond?
Just pride. I was just
here. Well, I don't know, things are pretty big in BC, too.
Oh, look, Barbara showed up. We're right at our last deal. You got anything to say, Barbara?
Yeah. Oh, hi. I got knocked off. I just wanted to say thank you for inviting me on. This was really fun and a great show, and I'm happy to meet all of you guys. And, I think I have a great faith, very strong faith in us all, actually, and I just know that our awareness and being alert to the truth of things and the power that we do have, we are not powerless. And I had received a message many years ago when I had a near-death experience that no matter what, everything was going to be all right. And I truly believe in that. I know we're in challenging times, and I believe that we are being given an opportunity. I've always felt that we're in a great big school here, and are we going to graduate this time? I guess maybe that's the question.
I hope so.
Like, you know, we have that opportunity, so that's all I want to say. I thank you so much, everybody.
Well, Barbara, before we leave up out here, I just want to say, number one, I am humbled and I am truly honored for your presence on today's show.
Me too. And Barbara, even though you kicked me down into second place,
No,
right.
I didn't.
All right,
now.
I'm trying to get the
coolest
person
on the show.
I love you.
I kind of like you too, Barbara.
All right, look. I'm
humbled. Like
look, I'm going to put everybody back on the same level playing. Old King Shaziz is terrible. I've been saying this forever and a day. I am truly humbled, and I am truly honored. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart that any of you would spend your time with me. Because it tells me that I'm not totally insane. If there's other people out there in this world that see the same urgency that I do and have the same amount of love that I do, that want to share it with the world and send that wave out into the world that is going to make our world a better place for the children of the future. Barbara talked about planting the seeds. We may not live long enough to see the fruits of our labor, but somebody down the line is going to benefit, just like we did for our forefathers that planted the seeds prior to us being here.
And just what you said about planting the seed, Barbara's one that mentioned planting the seed. We need to plant the seed, but we cannot do it alone, folks.
That's right.
All you listeners out there, you loyal listeners, please keep smiling.
We need you to exercise the true power that you have within you and realize that you have that potential. You have the free will to choose. You can choose to walk away. Or you can choose to join the, I don't want to like say fight, because we're really not trying to fight. We're trying to do it peacefully. Tell the world there's options. But we are.
We need help, folks.
Yeah, our backs are against the wall and the demons are coming at us from every direction. And we're trying to tell everybody, look, that's not hopeless until, you know, I shouldn't say this, but there's a phrase out there called "It ain't over till the fat lady sings," and I don't hear no singing yet. All right, maybe that's kind of rude, and I shouldn't have said that. But my book says, my book says that no man knows the time or day that he'd come like a thief in the night, and so that tells me that I don't know when the last day is going to be. I don't know when the end of the world is coming. All I know is that between here and now, I got to do the right thing. Otherwise, I'm going to pay the price for what I did. And everybody paid a price for what they did. We're all paying the price together for what everybody's done in the world. The leaders of the world, the evil people, the greedy people have set the pace and the path for all of us to have to walk on. And all the things, the wars and the craziness that's occurred throughout our histories has all come back to bite us in the back of the neck. I'm hoping that whenever the children of the future finally get to the age that Barbara's at and Raymond's at and Thomas and myself and Barry, I'm hoping that they don't get bit back in the neck. I'm hoping that we fend that monster off so they don't have to deal with it. So, you guys got anything last to say?
I know that the so-called demons or the dark is also a teacher. And we have to ask ourselves, what can we learn from what this is? And I also know that the light is more powerful than the dark. And we have to spend some time, I guess, messing around or whirling around in that darkness in order to learn things. And it's up to us to escape from that. I guess people call it the Matrix, or it's up to us to really, seek out something much more beautiful positive for ourselves and for all of humanity, our children and grandchildren, and we do pretty much have to take responsibility for what we create here in our lifetime, because it's going to go on into infinity. The saying, what goes around comes around, is a very true thing. It may not come around in our time, it may not come around for millennia, but it will come around, and that's how we must understand and take responsibility for what we are as co-creators. What do we want? What is your dream? What is your vision?
What I see out of all of this is all of us, every single one of us, without fail, we all went down the rabbit hole and we emerged prophets because we saw what was going on and we woke up. We're telling the world and we're bringing more prophets to the table. Prophets. Think about that word. Not talking about putting money in your pocket. I'm talking about seeing the path that we're on and knowing that we got to get our act together. I know that sounds crazy. I said Paul Harvey back in 1964 or 65 sounded like a prophet because he told what was going on, and we're sitting here laying it out what could be. What could be coming down the road? We don't want World War III. We don't need World War III. And the only ones that could ever stop the World War III before it ever even happens is we the people when we don't comply. Somebody once said, you only have a soldier when he's willing to pick up the weapons of war and use them. Are you willing to pick up the weapons of war and kill your brothers and sisters around the world for what you perceive to be patriotism or whatever? Or are you willing to stand there at the table with the rest of us and speak the common sense that will resonate to all the other people in the world who I believe the majority of the people feel the same way that we do?
I do know that love is a power. If you don't believe in love or a possibility of love or love making a difference, then it won't. And I do believe that we have the capability. I do believe peace exists. It must be first found within our own hearts, peace. If you don't believe that peace will never be experienced, then it won't. We have to start with our own self first. Like they say, take care of your own light first. Then you'll shine your own light out, right?
I tell you right now, love's got control of me because I keep getting dragged back to the table as much as I might get frustrated and try to walk away. And I try to walk that path that you're talking about, Barbara. I try to shine that light to be a beacon to my children and everybody around me. And like Raymond, I'm trying to smile at everybody and his brother because I'd rather see a smile than a frown any day. I don't know what else to say.
Well, you just keep doing what you're doing, and I think that just have the grace in your heart and the love in your heart without, like I said, we can't get stuck in our own agenda that it must be this way or that must be that way. We just have to be. We have to be that light. We have to be that smile, be that compassion, be that peace. And that's our job.
That's right, people. It ain't about me. It ain't about you. It's about us. It's about the boat we're floating around in space or time or whatever. And it's all in here together. And that's that. So, world don't revolve around old King Shaziz the Terrible. But old King Shaziz the Terrible is trying to set out here and tell you guys, look, I see something coming you might want to keep an eyeball on. Don't want you to panic. I want you to use wisdom and everything you've learned and spread the message in a respectful manner to other people out there so they too can see that light. That's as simple as that. So, I guess that's it, man. That's the end of the Knights of the Round Table. Life stinks! Anybody? No? I tried to throw a bit of humor in the past, in there at the end there.
Well, some people can tell a joke and some can't. Hey, he pluribus unum. All you loyal listeners out there, please help us.
Yeah, spread these podcasts. Somebody get this podcast over there to Patty.
Every smile, you can't fight.
Alright, I'm going to upload the podcast, spread it around, share it with everybody. You've heard some words of wisdom, and that's that. That's the Knights of the Round Table. If you care to join in, it's as easy as a Skype call to become a Knight of the Round Table. If you just want to be an honorary Knight of the Round Table, we actually got a Knight of the Round Table sitting inside the chat room right now. Stephen Gibbons, I got to thank him, because even though he don't want to come on radio for some reason, live, he put some information out there that is brilliant. And he is part of what makes this show happen, just like you are. So everybody, peace and love. You've been listening to Knights Roundtable at www.shazizradio.com. Check me out on YouTube if you like mad science. If you don't, then...
Bam! Sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there? I'm 37. What? I'm 37. I'm not old. Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What? I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh.
Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance when we're able. We do routine to call the scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that our quite unsing able. We're off the bad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Hear ye, hear ye. King Shaziz the Turtle. All those looking, Shaziz the Turtle and the Knights of the Round Table.